In compliance with the Open Public Meeting Act, this is a regular meeting of the Township Committee. The meeting notice has been posted at the Municipal Building and distributed to the Hunterdon Review, Courier News, the Express Times, Hunterdon County Democrat, and the Star Ledger. All please rise for flag salute, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, first is presentation is minutes. We have the minutes of the special meeting from February 27th.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of February 27th, 2017.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Abstain.
Yes.
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 Okay, then we have the meetings of the special, the minutes of the special meeting of February 28th.
Make that motion of the minutes of the special executive session held on February 27, 2017, to approve the minutes as they are.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Abstain.
Yes.
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 Okay, so you did them individually? I did them. Okay, I figured we're doing them. That's fine. That's fine. Then we have the February 28th. Fine. We're good. The February 28th and special meeting minutes. And then, yeah, that's fine.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting on February 28th, 2017.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Abstain.
Yes.
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 Then we have the February 28th special executive session meeting minutes.
I make that motion to accept the minutes of the special executive session from February 28th, 2017.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Abstain.
Yes.
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 Okay. Now we have the minutes of the regular meeting from March 1st, 2017.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the March 1st, 2017 regular meeting.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay, then we have the minutes of the executive session meeting minutes for March 1st, 2017. Can I get a motion?
Make a motion to accept the executive minute meetings for March 1st, 2017.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay, now we have, can I get a motion to open a public comment limited to agenda items only?
I'll make a motion to open the public comment limited to agenda items only.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes? No? Okay. Seeing none, can I get a motion to close?
I'll make a motion to close the public comments.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay.
Okay.
That was simple. So, Mark Salek, Economic Development Initiative. Right. So we're your audience. Clearly, the normal peanut gallery isn't even.
Yeah, that's surprising because I usually attract the peanut gallery. So maybe after almost a year of doing this, everybody's heard enough. We start off and make sure I get everybody up on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Hunterdon County NJ Economic Development, but I try to put everybody up there. So, one, two, three. There we go. By the way, Lebanon Township was one of the first places that was mentioned to me when I announced I was coming to Hunterdon. My father is retired am often bored, and so he researches a lot of the things that I do. And growing up in my family, everybody was a runner. Track was a big thing. And the first thing my dad does is call me and say, "Hey, do you know that Mary Decker Slaney's from the place where you're going?" So, so I looked on. I was like, "Sure enough, hey, she's from Lebanon Township." How long did she? Was she just born here and then left, or did she actually grow up here? Does anyone know that?
I don't know.
Just curious. So that's how I heard about Lebanon Township, from my father and referencing Mary Decker. So, I appreciate the time this evening. As I was explaining, I was very determined before my first year was up to make it through all 26 towns in at least some introductory fashion. My first year is up next week, so I'm almost gonna get there. I got two communities after this week that I will not have gotten to in any kind of formal way anyway. So I appreciate you letting me slip in under the wire here. And one of the reasons I'm trying to do this is to kind of show where this program has impact. For example, I went to Franklin Township, and the mayor said, "Yeah, we'd love to hear from you, but we don't quite know. We don't have, a town center, and we don't have industrial land or anything, so we don't know where the connection is going to be." And by the end of those kind of conversations, they do, because even in a place like Lebanon Township, where you guys may be thinking the same thing, what this initiative is about is trying to create opportunity, particularly for the emerging workforce. So the idea is that what we'd like to do is create the kind of opportunity where kids can stay, or at least, at the very least, young people can come to Hunterdon County, repopulate our school districts, buy everybody's homes later on and so forth. Or maybe folks here have a business in the other part of the county that can benefit from the initiative and so on and so forth. So at the very least, even if we never end up partnering on anything, I wanted to at least establish some kind of correlation between what we do and the impact on the residents here. And that actually really helps me over time, because no matter where I go, we get a bunch of very, very smart people interested in what we're doing, and I have no doubt that there's plenty of these those here in Lebanon Township as well. So again, as I make my runs to the communities, we end up growing the partnership with representatives from different parts of the communities, and so that's benefit as well, because we really do have been trying to build this thing from the ground up instead of pushing top down. So rifling through this really quickly. Standard economic development, as most people know, it has to do with a lot of these things, workforce attraction or workforce development, business attraction, and so on and so forth. And obviously, those are things we talk about, and obviously, some of those things will be referenced tonight. But because I'm trying to make sure this stays short tonight and on a lot of these presentations, I'm focusing on more of what's on the transformative model, because I could talk about those previous things for 4 hours. Anyone for that version, by the way? I've never had any takers on that.
I see your hands.
Yeah, that's right. And I have it in 23 other towns. So
it's like a Saturday afternoon.
That's right. So, we try to focus this piece on just the stuff that's transformative. And I'm sure most people are aware in here that the county did a comprehensive economic development study. There was a lot of issues and challenges pointed out in that. To me, it boils down to a couple things: aging population and declining population, because if we don't fix those, doesn't really matter much else what we do. And if we think these numbers are bad now, if any of you have looked at the Department of Labor's projection for 2030, they're downright bleak for Hunterdon. Basically, the numbers start to make you realize that the county, is the way we know and love it, is somewhat unsustainable. A lot of those top factors are being driven by the fact that in the last 10 years, the county switched over to seeing the primarily low-wage job creation. And, of course, you cannot live in Hunterdon and certainly raise a family long-term if you've got a low-wage job. But when you look at where you can get your high-wage positions from, building for the future here in Hunterdon, there's only so many industries that can come from, right? We've got open space, we've got the highlands, we've got farmland preservation, we don't have a lot of infrastructure, we don't have a lot of public or political will for big footprint projects, and so on and so forth. So we really need these to be the criteria for what we go after, because, frankly, if chemical manufacturing was the highest paid positions in the entire United States, I wouldn't have much success, nor would I want to push a model for development for us based around growing chemical manufacturing facilities. So What we're focusing on, again, is that transformative part of what we do here on developing clean and niche technologies that are conducive to Hunterdon, the environment and our workforce and what we want. A great example I use for this is a company called Integrated Clinical Systems in Kingwood Township. They've really been one of our best-kept secret companies for a long time, but no longer because I'm talking about them nonstop. But this company writes software for very high-end pharmaceutical companies and does training. So what you've got is you've got a little beautiful retreat-like facility because of the high-end clients that they cater to. They don't any of the townships would be happy to have this. They're entirely self-sustaining. They don't use basically any more water than it takes 25 to 30 instructors or programmers to flush toilets and make coffee every day. But they're in a respected industry. Because they're tagged to pharma, they are in line with what else has been big and growing in New Jersey. And the average wage of those 25 to 30 positions at Integrated Clinical Systems is $175,000. That certainly is enough money to provide the opportunity to raise a family here and doing it in the kind of industry that is acceptable to pretty much all of our communities.
Are they taking applications for employment?
Do you have any coding or programming in your background?
No.
All right, well, we'll be having courses soon. So that's a model for growth that we can certainly all rally behind. So, you know, here's just a little example of where advanced industries make the difference on the wages. The top 100 clusters in the United States, of those, the closest one is across the river from us in Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton. As you can see here, the bottom number on the right is their average annual earnings across all industries, $46,000, and across their advanced industries there, it's almost $70,000. That's a 50% increase. And, of course, the media is constantly reminding us that the best jobs are in tech, tech, and tech. This was a very recent USA Today article. The goal at the end of the day is to make sure we stop educating students for export purposes only. So we've got sort of a three-prong approach to this, and this was the initial conversation right out of the gate. This evolves as we talk to the communities and the businesses and the schools, of course. But the initial approach, and it's still somewhat this, to talk to the towns. Obviously, New Jersey has a bad reputation, and Hunterdon even worse, deserve it or not, in terms of businesses being able to get up and running quickly compared to the rest of the nation and inexpensively. So for the industries that we'd like to see grow, what we're talking about is creating a little bit more of a turnkey environment for those companies to thrive. Does that mean expedited processes? Does it mean waiver of some fees, some targeted incentives, so on and so forth? Hard to say. That's for the communities to decide for themselves. But we've got six communities that are having this conversation with us right now who very much want to grow their tech community, and they're looking at putting a plan in place so that when I go out in the world and I'm at a tech conference in the Midwest and I've got another Integrated Clinical Systems on the hook, and I have, let's say I've got a great location for them in Clinton, I'm not just saying to them, hey, we've got a great location for you. I'm saying we have got a community that has already decided you're what they want, and we can get you going up and we can get you up and running cheaper and quicker than a lot of other locations, certainly a lot of other New Jersey locations. This really gives us something to work with, not to mention when you combine it with what our workforce is here and the education level that we've got, it makes it a much better sell. So along with this, of course, thinking long term, we'd like to coordinate our career pathways in these areas with our schools and this, what the students get awareness program, awareness and exposure to. So to that extent, we would very much like to make sure that any way they can get exposed and attached to these kind of opportunities as they grow here, that happens. We're already working. This town feeds in the North Hunterdon, I'm assuming?
Voorhees.
Voorhees, right. Same district, though, with Jeff Bender, mm-hmm. superintendent. We're already working with that administration because they very much support this effort. Jeff and I and some of his people have been out to ExxonMobil together to start this conversation. We've been to Picatinny Arsenal because they have a lot of programs. Again, all this stuff is beginning stages, but if we can develop internships and other kind of exposure to these over time, we feel it'll hopefully give us a better chance of keeping our kids local. And the third prong is, in some ways, what's getting the most attention, this entrepreneurial initiative that we've got going, with the idea being that we want to identify and partner with our innovators. If we have folks with ideas here in Hunterdon We want to make sure they can grow their ideas here. So to that extent, we want mentor networks in place, and we want local options in terms of financing, and we want to explore the options of business incubators and so on and so forth. Again, same idea. If someone's got an idea, they can grow it cheaper and easier here. Why not make that path available? So that if we do a really good job on that, frankly, we don't even have to worry about attracting companies long term. We have the brain power to grow our own, and we're making sure that we're partnering with those opportunities. So moving the plan forward, and we'll get back to the tech piece, we're really making sure that we're engaging with all the municipalities. This is my first time before you all, but in a lot of the communities I've obviously was able to get before much earlier, and we've already developed a working relationship and have launched projects, so much to the extent that this is a little sample here, and you don't need to read this, but it's the bottom line is I've got 10 communities that we're working with that we've got an active work plan with for 2017. A lot of it's just designed initially this first year to create accountability in me to the community. So if you're a Raritan Township and we're going to have a property locator on our economic development website, obviously we want to make sure that Raritan has a say in terms of how a lot of their properties are represented to the world. So we want to make sure that that accountability is created. But in this case with Flemington, there's already a unique project in place, and that is the fact that we're running a hackathon with them, and I'll get to that in a second. But again, that just kind of speaks to the way we're approaching this initiative, which is bottom-up, not top-down. We want to make sure we're engaging our subject matter experts in these areas. And so to that extent, if you're talking about the tech initiative, you're talking about engaging the tech community. So what you're looking at here is the splash page, although there's less than 93 days to go now. You're looking at the hackhunterdin.com splash page. And we're running a hackathon in conjunction with the Hunterdin Chamber and the Flemington Community Partnership, because they very much back this sort of tech innovation central theme to development that we're moving forward. And so they partnered with us on this. And what a hackathon is basically a 24 to 48 hour problem-solving session where your IT community, in particular your coders and your programmers, et cetera, and your software designers come together to either move their projects forward or to solve problems that you're already presenting. So essentially they're moving IT, they're generating IT solutions to problems, whether it's problems they bring or problems you provide to them. These are things that have taken root across the nation. We didn't invent hackathons, but they usually aren't done in communities this small, and certainly it's the first time it's happened here. So Hack Hunterdin is going to be Hunterdin County's hackathon. It's going to be April 28th, 29th. It's going to be at the Flemington Feed Mill on Route 12, which, if you don't know, that's where Roman Jewelers is. It's also stunningly beautiful offices behind there. So what we're going to do is we're going to lock those people up for 24 hours, and they're going to be generating projects and pitching them for prizes afterwards. One of the reasons we went down this road is, getting back to the whole innovation network idea and an innovation initiative idea and engaging everyone in it. When we talked to technologists in New York and Philadelphia, and we said, play devil's advocate, why can't a tech initiative work in Hunterdin? They inevitably told us that you guys are only going to have a limited amount of ability to attract that kind of workforce here. So you better know who you've already got. The hackathon gives us the ability to reach out to those folks. So in conjunction with this, for example, we've got a Hack Hunterdin meetups going down at Flemington. We've already got 125 very highly qualified people signed up to this. A lot of them already registered for the event. This is giving us three things. We're creating a technology community. They're not engaged with each other now, even though we're finding out they're here. So if you got someone that's in a home office trying to develop an app that could be the next big thing and they want to get a team together, right now there's not a lot of local community to engage to get that team on board. We've already had projects like that coming together just at these meetups alone. So we're helping create that community where they can gauge each other, and obviously there's a lot of synergy from that. But we're also getting them engaged in our efforts. So instead of me and Freeholder Legay and Chamber President Chris Phelan trying to come up with a scheme to attract tech companies here on our own, we've got that community actively engaged in our efforts. The third thing this does is it puts us so in touch with our innovators that it gives us an idea of what the rest of the network can look like. So we start understanding what is our market for a business incubator, maybe even more specifically a tech launch incubator, and so on and so forth. So this is just a little example of not only a partnership that's developed from working with a local community, but an example of something that hits across a lot of lines in terms of helping our entire tech initiative move forward. One of the reasons I also like talking about this, especially in the more rural towns that we've got, is it starts to give folks insight into the fact that this effort is not going to be all about, or sometimes not at all about, bricks and mortar. This is the kind of development that we're talking about. So jumping forward here, a couple other goals really initially is that we're going to make sure that we get this effort very, very loud. We are currently working with the company to get a brand for the Economic Development Initiative. We've got some pitches on the table for that right now. Once that is done, we're going to be getting the Economic Development website together. We're going to be getting a lot louder on social media. We're basically, in a targeted fashion to the areas that we want, going to be announcing that Hunterdon County is open to the world. Is this going to be, again, at a chemical manufacturing trade show? No. But at a tech trade show, absolutely. On the front of that brand, just to give an example of what we're talking about, I'll show you what we're kind of modeling it after from a philosophical point of view. This is a county, Miami County, Ohio, that has a lot of similarities to Hunterdon, and it was near where I worked out in Ohio, which was where I was working before here. If you notice, their tagline on the top there is home period, grown period, great. They apply that in a lot of ways. This county is very similar to us in that they're also proud of their history. They're also near what passes for a municipality in that area, which is Dayton, but they're more educated. They also have a lot of active parts. They've got a lot of parts and active lifestyle, and they have artisan food and beverage movement like we do here. So if you look at how they apply homegrown great, here's their campaign for homegrown lifestyle. And again, we have the same thing. You got the tubing, you got the biking, you got all kinds of healthy, active possibilities here. Here's their innovation concept, and they pitch it as homegrown ideas. I know it's a little bit hard to read there. Moving on, they've got a homegrown history, which is evident in this landmark they've got. And this is homegrown goodness for the artisan food and beverage movement. So the idea is that whatever brand we end up getting, we want it to apply to a lot of sub-themes that encapsulates what Hunterdon County is and what we have to offer. So I'll jump ahead on this. Actually, I'll make one point on this. This is pretty much a recap of what I jammed in the front of the presentation to keep it short for you, which is this idea of holding on to our innovators and entrepreneurs. But taking the top example incubators, a lot of folks will tell us that we cannot have successful business incubators in this size community. So I went out and I found a lot of examples that clearly state that's not true. And you don't have to read any of this, but this is an impact report from two counties, Franklin and Southampton County in Virginia. And jumping forward here, this is their Wikipedia entry. Southampton has 18,500 people in rural Virginia, and Franklin has 56,100. So this is a two-county consortium with an innovation initiative that's half the size of Hunterdon is on its own. And the little arrow is pointing to the fact that to date, this incubator has spun off 18 successful businesses from it. And the key to the whole thing and why we would like to have a local incubator is that 12 of those businesses stayed local and grew into successful firms locally. So again, there are examples around the country of rural communities like Hunterdon having successful incubators. I'll skip this part and save it for another time. So jumping ahead to tourism really briefly, there's a tie to tourism and what I've been talking about that's not so obvious, but it becomes obvious when you look at it. Tourism has a lot of benefits for a community like ours. You know, we've got the river towns and nice little quaint walkable communities like Clinton and all the other things we talked about. I don't need to sell the value of that. But if you look at what we're marketing ourselves as a tourist destination, those things I just talked about and that lifestyle and that very in farm-to-table movement, proximity to New York and Philly and so on and so forth, you're talking about marketing the exact kind of things that a lot of this kind of workforce that we want to retain and attract wants, that are tied to these industries. So a good tourism effort also acts as sort of a de facto workforce retention and attraction program also. So when I got here, tourism was one little committee within the SEDS effort, very busy people. So essentially we were relegating tourism to be something that I could only get to 10% of my time, that was executed through a committee of very busy volunteers. That's not going to do justice to what tourism can be in Hunterdon. So what we're trying to do is make sure that tourism becomes a collaborative, fully funded, countywide effort. So we're looking at ways to do that. Matter of fact, we pitched our entire economic development model to the Highlands, and they think the whole thing's very Highlands compliant, so they actually may work with us in terms of funding some studies to try to help us figure out what the structure of this looks like, because they want to encourage tourism within the Highlands. And I mention that here because I'm pretty sure you guys are entirely within the, your entire township is within the Highlands.
96%?
That's the preservation. That's the preservation.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There's 6 acres
that's now.
Yeah.
What are on those 6 acres?
Muller Toyota.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but the one little example I'll leave you with, that's again hits on a couple things at one time. It talks to about what we can do with tourism, and it also talks about what can happen when we start working with our local communities. Is the top example here under tourism is a rail repair capital campaign, and this has evolved with Milford. The nonprofit rail lines that run in Warren County and in eastern Pennsylvania and do a lot of those things like the Polar Express and the wine trips, etc. They very much want to have an end destination in Hunterdon. Problem, as we know, is that whole rail down the river there isn't functional at this time. But there's been some indications recently that we could have success getting that repair fixed. There was a very hurried 8-week capital campaign run by like one person before Milford's Festival last year that got an entire mile, got funding enough to fix an entire mile. And so with Milford Alive last year, they had the Milford Mile, and they brought a locomotive in, and they ran it up and down that mile for the length of the fest, and people went crazy. So we are going to work with a couple entities to get a very high-profile campaign online, because if we can end up connecting all the way up into Warren County, we can have a lot of tourists coming in and discovering Hunterdon County on that rail. They can come into Milford, they can spend their money, they can learn about the rest of the Hunterdon. And if the county's open space program moves forward and the bike trails are connected up to meet that rail, then folks could come in on their bikes potentially and then bike down into Frenchtown and other areas, spend money there and learn more about Hunterdon. So again, it's a nice little example of what one of the central tenets that we're trying to move forward, tourism, how that can benefit our individual communities. And this is just another nice little example of what happens when we partner with our local communities. So again, when I got here, and even during my interview process, they said to me, what are the first things you're going to do when you get this job, Mark? And apparently one of the reasons that I got hired was I looked back at them and I said, how the heck should I know? I said, I understand economic development and how to run one of these initiatives, but I'm not going to assume walking in that I understand what's best for Hunterdon. We're going to have to build that from the ground up, and the county's going to have to resist pushing that down. So these are the kind of things that have been a result of that, and I think it's worked well, and the partnerships are really coming together to give us a very immersed economic development campaign long-term that can hopefully have a lot of unique ways to benefit all across the county. And I will leave it at that. I can take Q&A if you'd like, but if you need to move on with your meeting, you can just shut me up right now. So.
So what rail line were you talking of? The Columbia Trail down there?
And I always forget the name. The one that's most interested right now is called
Black River and Western.
Well, they're already in the county. The one that's out of county is like, I think, the New York Susquehanna. They run the Polar Express. I've been up to where they're based, in their local base in Warren. They're the ones that very much want to. Matter of fact, what they really would love to see, too, is like a Milford-Phillipsburg connection. I don't know how the heck that would happen exactly, but that's one of them that has expressed that's the main one that really wants this to happen. And again, they run that popular Polar Express and a few other things. But right now, they kind of just come down the Hunterdon and turn back the other way. But apparently there's a lot of interest in making sure they can hit our river towns. So, anybody else? Yes, sir.
Can I ask? You started with a rather bleak picture, which I've heard over and over. But just to set the baseline, do I recall that is Hunterdon County used to be like in the top six or seven counties in the country in terms of average income?
Oh, yeah.
Are we still up in that range?
Yeah.
And what drives that income here? Is it just because people with bigger real estate work in New York and Philadelphia?
A lot of it is that. A lot of it's momentum. Like, you know, there used to be so many more big companies here, of course, like Merck, and those folks are still here.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, that's evaporated. So the trend's been in the other direction, but that trend hasn't been going so long that that's weeded out everybody. So there's the fact that a lot of people are working in other places. There's the fact there's a lot of momentum from before, and so on and so forth. But a lot of those aren't sustainable. We talked about the example of how a lot of the folks that have that higher income, they're not connected locally to their companies anymore. But if you look at the trends, it's the upcoming generation, this idea of people being willing to sit in traffic for an hour and a half, it's really going away. Folks want to work closer to home now, and that is the trend we're seeing from... I'm Generation X. No one talks about us anymore. We don't exist because we're small between the boomers and the millennials. But everybody behind me essentially has no tolerance for traffic and things like that. So can I sit here and conclusively tell you that all that's going to continue to go in the other direction? No. But between those factors and the fact that we know the population has declined and is continuing to decline, the writing's kind of on the wall on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we're still up there, and it's one of the first things I looked at when I researched coming.
And is that direction staying stable, or is that declining as well? Are we moving from, you know, 5th to 8th to 12th over a few
years? You know, that I don't know. And even when I was researching, it really also depends on what the poll's measuring to. Mm-hmm. Like, household income is the most common one, and that one we're really high on. But think about all the things that aren't getting measured there. You know, there's so many other ways to make money. That's not necessarily coming to you in a paycheck each year, and a lot of these ratings don't measure those things. So it's really hard to get direction off of them, I would say.
But I guess the more maybe relevant point to a place like Lebanon Township, I applaud all your efforts and work, and to me the river towns and Clinton and even Highbridge, you know, for the millennials and the up-and-comers that we want to get, because it's... hate to say it, obviously the baby boomers nobody cares about, the Gen X maybe you're overlooked.
No one really cares about us.
But that next group is, and they don't want to live in Lebanon Township. I assume you haven't really had a chance to look. I shouldn't say that they don't want to live in Lebanon Township, but there was an interesting study that Karen provided to us from like 1967, pointing out that Lebanon Township doesn't have a center. We don't have our own post office.
Right.
Nobody says they. You know, their address, nobody's address is Lebanon Township. It's Califon, it's Glenn Gardner, it's...
Right.
And
that's
so
Raritan's complaint, too. Everything's Flemington.
So in our town, people have a couple of different centers. And so I applaud getting more economic development, but somewhere along your line, are you going to try to figure out how those people who want to live close to a downtown and, you know, write software code and go out to artisan, you know, brew pubs right. and restaurants... How do they want to own a 5 to 20 acre parcel of land in Lebanon Township? Because that's kind of our bread and butter, I think.
Yeah, it's and the trends are everything you read is away from that, right?
Exactly.
So I guess the answer to that is hard to say, and I don't know what that plan looks like long term. But I do know that if we don't reverse the population and get young folks in here, it never will happen.
Yeah.
So perhaps if we have success in this initiative. The immediate, from a housing point of view, the immediate benefit ends up being in a Lambertville or a Flemington or something like that. But as those folks move up the scale, you know, as the 28-year-olds taking these jobs turn into 40-year-olds with kids, you would have to think that some of that is going to matriculate out. And, you know, this is only anecdotal, but I think the real thing working for us here is that we're not looking for massive change. I don't think anybody wants Hunterdon to go, what's your population?
Here in Lebanon, 6,500.
Yeah, I'm sure what you'd like to do is maintain that, but you don't want to grow to 12,000 people, right?
No.
So we only need, you know, if this effort succeeds in keeping like 3.2% more of our kids locally, that's probably enough to sustain the numbers. So I think the flip side of that is, yeah, there's a lot of things that are problems if we were looking for massive overwhelming success, but because massive overwhelming success to us to some extent, by some measure, such as population, is simply maintained and stop losing, I think that also makes it a lot more realistic, if that makes sense. So,
and I guess the only other thing I would throw as a brainstorming idea, I get the tech incubators and apps and things like that, but I think what you might get more in our township, more traction with, is the farm-to-table headline, and whether that's all the way into Jersey City and Hoboken, or whether that's to, you know, I don't know if Flemington really needs Lebanon Township's farm capabilities, but I think that's what the problem is. That's not the high income necessarily, unless it's done in a very interesting way. For example,
I don't think it's
Hunterdon County, but the sheep farmer up near Long Valley.
Yeah, 517.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if you talk to him a little bit, he late in life started a. You know, he's got some sheep and he does cheese. He loads up the trucks into New York City, into, you know, every farmer's market, the little farmer's markets in New York City, in Hoboken, in Jersey City. He sells at whatever price he wants to put on it, and they love the fact that it's, you know,
artisan
natural
cheeses,
and artisan
right?
cheeses. And
yeah, they go bumper for it. They
exactly.
pay anything.
So we could, I think we could get some high-income organic foods, artisan foods, if it were marketed correctly. Again, Flemington may not be the market for our, you know, it's got to go in Philadelphia, New York, where people would pay for it.
But you're right, though. That's not necessarily going to generate the job side of it, but it does generate tourism. It does bring money in. It does feed into establishing what our brand is, and it is a part, a small part maybe, I don't know, you could wait, but it is a part of that workforce attraction piece, too, because it's a nicety of living here.
Exactly.
Let me tell you something. I was so, when I got here last March, shortly after that, I switched. I'd never done this before, but I did not buy a vegetable from anywhere other than all our farm stands again until they closed. And I haven't bought vegetables all winter because they don't taste like anything. I just can't wait for them to open again. I never knew how amazing part of life that was until I came here.
Exactly.
So I do think it's a big deal. And
but those
I've
operations
like,
are pretty labor intensive. When you say it doesn't drive jobs, it actually it drives jobs. It's just a matter of having the business model that pays for people to be able to live anywhere close to here.
There are people looking at that, and of course, there's only so many things we can do at one time.
Right, understood.
But, you know, I've met with the alpaca farm down near Stockton and had conversations about this, the folks in Alexandria that are doing the hard cider, and so on and so forth. There's something we can do with that, and that group very much wants to make something happen. Again, we're early. I don't know what it looks like, but I agree with you 100%, and I think we can really play up agritourism, too, as a part of all this. So.
Just a couple of comments. One, to follow up on what you were saying, Mark, the other area that I think this township would fit in well with is equestrian.
Mm-hmm.
Equestrian is a big business, and everybody who's in it, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of very rich people looking for nice parcels of land where they can have a couple of horses and they can lose their money. So, you know,
lose.
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, I'm just past Generation X. Sort of.
Generation One.
Whoa, very good. But you know, when I came out to Hunterdon County, like my practice takes me around the state. Quite a bit. When I came to Hunterdon County, I didn't mind moving out here, even though it's, say, a half hour from Morristown, because when I could get on Route 78 in the morning, I could be in Morristown in 26 minutes.
Right.
Now, you get on Route
1.
Yeah. Well, the horse. You know, it was a little slow, but we got there still in 26 minutes. Now I could ride my horse faster. But Route 78 is a disaster. Yeah. Every morning, it's backed up for miles. At some point from
287
north, south. So that's going to be a real hamper. Because if I was a young person and say, I want to move out of the city, I want to have a little more land, I want to have my kids a place where they can play in the backyard, which there's a lot of people in Brooklyn that are right in that category. You come to Hunterdon County and you work east,
you're in deep doo-doo, man, because you got to go, you're going to sit traffic almost every morning, and that's a real problem.
The wall at the Delaware River, though.
Yeah, you're right.
Somewhere issue.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, when I, 20-what years ago, when I was working in the field, we started at 8. Now our guys start at 6:30.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just because to try to beat that traffic, you know,
it's brutal.
It just comes down to it. It's like, you know, we've essentially changed our contracts to say, you know, so that they can start at 6:30, you know.
That's yet another reason why we're trying to focus as much as we can on local job creation, because that's going to kill us long term. And, you know, that's the stuff that has to do with 78 and stuff, of course, is above where I'm generally working. But the county hasn't given up on getting New Jersey Transit in here to help with some of those things and to deal with 78 issues. I mean, those are things that are still conversations. They come up no matter where we go, especially in places like Clinton. But there's only so much we're going to be able to do about a lot of that stuff. Again, I would say one of the best ways that we can have that conversation is by making sure we're not becoming more, quote-unquote, irrelevant. You know, if our population continues to slide, there's no way New Jersey Transit is going to invest in the train system here, et cetera. So, you know, hopefully this indirectly at least can address that while some of the bigger plans are coming together.
Respectfully, there is something the county could do,
okay,
which is parking for people who want to take a bus. I think trains are not a viable option because the capital costs are so great.
Right.
But a bus with the proper bus lanes or whatever. For years, the state, the county have just dropped the ball in terms of the interchanges and not acquiring property along those interchanges. Right now, the park and ride lot in Clinton, if you don't get there by 6:30 in the morning, you're dead. You can't park. And there is no parking around there.
Yeah.
And without making provisions for some kind of mass transit, getting into New York City, getting into the 287 corridor, and that's something the county could do if it wanted to spend the money and invest in the capital necessary to create those kind of opportunities for people.
When you start talking about spending that kind of money, I'll be careful about what I say. But there's a lot of things that I think that make sense to do. Everyone agrees they make sense to do, but you're right. It's like how to get from A to Z on that one.
George Mielek will be up here wanting to hang all of us for supporting that idea.
But look, it's not going away.
Yeah.
So, and if we're going to go down that road, it's not going to get any cheaper to do it, right?
Yep.
So it needs to be a conversation for sure. So, and again, some of that stuff, you know, moving the tech initiative forward is a nice place to start because it's something we can do right now. So that's kind of why I lead with those things. But like I said at the beginning, it doesn't mean some of those bigger picture items aren't on the table. It's just I can't pretend to have any idea how to approach those things any better than you all have thought of at this point. But, you know, again, as we continue to partner, hopefully we'll get there over time. So.
Is there somewhere in Hunterdon County that has, like, I mean, typically incubators are in colleges or some, you know, like David Sarnoff Research Center or something like that. Is there some old building in Hunterdon County that can have that kind of structure that can support these small business units?
Well,
that to create that incubator environment?
Well, we think our effort's going to create the incubator environment to a large extent. I mean, the hackathon's just one example, but we're really going to engage and mobilize this community and make sure we're partnering with them.
Excuse me.
So we have to believe that we can have some success in that. Having a school drive it would be nice. I will tell you that we are talking to four-year schools about having some kind of presence here in Hunterdon. Don't know how successful that would be yet. Don't know what it looks like yet, but we would like to fill in that gap. In the meantime, there are several possibilities about where we could put this relatively inexpensively in the meantime. And the Chamber's new facility is one possibility that's on the table. There's a few others, which I probably shouldn't put people on the spot by saying in a public setting, but there's a few other options that make sense. But because we don't know what kind of response we'll get, obviously the first ones have to be really, really inexpensive to move forward. You know, and then over time, obviously, we realize we've got a gold mine here. We can maybe invest in something more significant. But that's why taking space we've already invested in, like the Chamber's renovation of the large house, might be where some of these things get off the ground. So, just to tell you how serious we are about that, we found an incredible expert who's done this kind of stuff all over the country in Philadelphia, who's part of been developing there. The renaissance has been going on down there with their entrepreneurial effort. and he's come up, started talking with us, and we may be getting a grant to hire him to help us analyze just, again, what the model looks like economically to be successful. I definitely won't pretend to have the answer to that right now. So, but valid question, and I'm just not sure how we'll get around that yet. Because you definitely don't make money on those things. You just, what you want to do is make sure you're losing as little as possible. If there's anything else, I'll pass out my card. I'll tell you guys.
What yeah, I tell. Yes, you have 3 hours at least left.
Like I said, that's why I warned you about yourself. It happens because, you know, I'll tell you, I presented to the Clinton Mill Group the other day, and that was all retired people, basically, and they asked me questions for an hour and 45 minutes. So the nice thing is about that, from my point of view, if you're me, is that the community is engaged in this and has clearly thought about this stuff, and there's a lot of ideas at the table. I think all we have to do to a certain extent is make sure the engagement process is always in place, make sure that we have a structure that can take that and turn it into ideas, and make sure the county's funding that structure. And then, not that this is a goal, I could frankly be an idiot and the thing will still work because we've got the good ideas out there, and we have a leadership in the county that wants these things to be successful. And it is evidenced by how long these conversations go on for. But it's nice to see, though. So, but yeah, we don't need to take up the whole floor. So. I'll pass out the card if anybody does want to continue. My cell number is on here. I just moved here, so I'll tell you what I tell everyone else, which is I have no life. So this is what I do, so feel free to call at any time to continue the conversation, give feedback, tell me I'm wasting my time, whatever it is that you guys want to do. So I'll go. Pass that here. Just pass them around.
What's the single most important thing that we can do for you at this point?
You know, I think it's the, to be honest with you, it probably starts with what happens here tonight. Because in certain, just like we know, there's certain realities. It's easier for me to come in and immediately see where it makes sense to engage Raritan Township, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit harder for me without knowing the culture to figure out how to engage some of the other communities. But the ways are there. The Milford one is a great example. So what I tell communities, like I was in Glen Gardner recently, and they said, you know, well, where can we establish partnership? I said, well, maybe one of the best ways is to make sure you know what we're doing. Maybe even put somebody connected to our efforts on one of our committees or something like that. Then what happens is you guys are better able to tell us, as you see what we're doing and direction we're going, what we can do for you.
That makes sense.
Doesn't mean I'll never have an idea, but you guys, it's going to be easier for you guys to look at what we're doing and apply it to yourselves, and obviously ever will be for me to do the same. So I think as I go through the communities, one of the things I really like to do is pick up intellectual assets along the way. So anybody that wants to talk about the effort or help with the tourism or help with the innovation piece and tie themselves to us that represents Lebanon Township, that can be the beginnings of a direction. Mm-hmm. And then on some of these other things, as I learn about what the folks and what your subject matter experts are out here, I can start engaging those folks more regularly. Like, I don't know, just as an example, maybe you've got the world's foremost authority on developing a tourism initiative living somewhere and you're retired in the home, and I don't know about him right now, but at some point I will. And obviously I'll beg and plead for that person to be a part of our expert, part of our effort, and as they lead us down the road, they'll be making sure that Lebanon Township is benefiting from that. So I think that's a good starting point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what, to me, I'd like to, you know, it's nice to talk the pie in the sky, but I like to turn things into concrete, executable plans.
Yes.
And if coming to meetings or understanding what you're doing will help that process, then that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a big, this is an open process. Like I said before, look, there's more than twice the amount of people with advanced degrees in this county than there were with regular four-year degrees in the county I just left. Mm-hmm. And not that education's everything, but then you look at the diversity of what people have done here and the roles they've played over time. This is one of the smartest population bases I could ever hope to work with. The ideas are there. Mm-hmm. We just need to put them, organize them, put them down, and push them in a direction. So all input is good input.
Great.
What town did you move to, Mark?
I live in I live in Clinton Township technically because I live in Beaverbrook. But I, you know, I just, this is easier to say, and I'm right in the back door. I just tell people I live in Clinton. But the 78 thing was part of that reasoning, because I would have lived in a river town, but my girlfriend lives in Morris County.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot easier to get to her just jumping right on the highway than it is wandering your way up from a French town or something like that. So I'm a north sider. I'm up on this side. It's very easy for me to get up this way for whatever that's worth. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the time, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Be careful on the way out.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is the first time I'll be driving home from this particular spot, and it's dark and snowing, so I'll go very slow.
And the whole way, too.
Yeah. Oh, right. I know. Oh, that's right. You're the one who saw
if you find yourself going uphill, you're going the wrong way.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Right. Here, you can have this one. I have one from before.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's right. You have one from East Amwell. Thank you.
Good job, Mark.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'll just quietly pack up.
Okay. Next item is a public hearing for the Ordinance 2017-02 Salaries. Salary ordinance. Can I get a motion to open to public comment?
Make a motion to open the public hearing, you mean?
Yeah, it's a public hearing, but it's public comment for.
Make a motion to open it to the public hearing for Ordinance 2017-02 salaries?
Yes.
I'll second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Seeing none, can I get a motion to close?
I'll make a motion to close.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Is there any discussion on it?
I don't have any.
Can we get a motion to approve then?
Make a motion to approve Ordinance Number 2017-02, Salary Ordinance.
I'll second that.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Thank you. Then we have Resolution 33-2017, overpayment of 2017 taxes. This is where there exists an overpayment of $2,651.06 for the first quarter 2017 taxes due for Block 77, Lot 7.152, Rolling Hills Way, a refund for CoreLogic Real Estate Tax Service. Can I get a motion to approve the resolution?
Make a motion to approve Resolution 33-2017, return overpayment of 2017 taxes.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 We have Resolution 34-2017, salary ordinance for our police department. Can I get a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion to approve the salary resolution for our police department.
A second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 And we have a request from Warren to be part of the Bergen County Co-op so he can purchase the calcium tank systems we discussed at the budget meeting. I guess there is not, from what we can tell, any kind of cost involved in this.
I don't believe so.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Bye.
Thank
you.
I confirm that with him. There's no upfront cost.
Okay. So this is Resolution 35-2017 to become part of this Bergen County Co-op. If we can get a motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve Resolution 35-2017 to join the Bergen County Co-op.
I'll second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Right? Yes. Okay. Resolution 36-2017 is the local budget introduction, which will be on today, March 15th.
No,
wait.
This is just special items of general revenue. Just technical issues. You're on the right line.
Oh, okay.
Just technical issues that have to...
Oh, this is for the grant, the money that's coming in through a grant. Sorry, I'm reading over here the wrong one. So we have allocation of state grants for various programs in the amount of $47,633. Okay, so this is, yeah, Resolution 36-2017.
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 36-2017, titled Special Items of General Revenue.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay, then we have 37-2017, the deferral of school taxes. Yeah, that whole process that I can hardly understand myself personally. So,
the bottom line point is that this year we're deferring $175,000 of incremental deferred school tax.
Okay. So, can I get a motion to approve Resolution 37-2017?
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 37-2017, deferral of school taxes.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay, now is Resolution 38, Municipal Budget Introduction, public hearing to be held on April 19th, 2017.
What time?
It's a normal meeting.
Is it a normal meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Make a motion to adopt Resolution 38-2017, Municipal Budget Introduction, public hearing to be held on April 19th, 2017 at 7 p.m.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Good job.
We have a proclamation for the American Red Cross for March month. Month 2017, this is to basically, let me read from the top. Yeah. In Lebanon Township, we have a long history of helping our neighbors in need. American Red Cross Month is a special time to recognize and thank our heroes, whose Red Cross volunteers and donors who give of their time and resources to help community members. These heroes help families find shelter after a home fire. They give blood to help trauma victims and cancer patients. They deliver comfort items to military members and the hospital. They use their life-saving skills to save someone from a heart attack, drowning, or choking. They enable children around the globe to be vaccinated against measles and rubella. Across the country and around the world, the American Red Cross responds to disasters big and small. In fact, every 8 minutes, the organization responds to a community disaster, providing shelter, food, emotional support, and other necessities to those affected. It collects nearly 40% of the nation's blood supply, provides 24-hour support to military members, veterans, and their families, teaches millions life-saving skills such as lifeguarding and CPR, and through its Restoring Family Links program, reconnects family members separated by crisis, conflict, and migration. We dedicate the month of March to all those who support the American Red Cross mission to prevent and alleviate human suffering in the faces of emergency.
And
I'm sitting here just
going,
there's
good.
A slip, huh?
Sounds like
work. Our community depends on the American Red Cross, which relies on the donations of time, money, and blood in the fulfillment of the humanitarian mission. Now, therefore, I, Mark Law, Mayor of Lebanon Township, by the virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and laws of the Lebanon Township and the State of New Jersey, do hereby proclaim March 2017 as American Red Cross Month. I encourage all Americans to support this organization and its noble humanitarian mission. Okay. That was a lot more reading than I thought I was going to do. Just a proclamation. Is there a motion to approve? Or?
Well, we usually do a motion just supporting.
Okay. So can I get a motion to support?
I'll make a motion to approve American Red Cross Month 2017 proclamation.
In the year of our Lord. Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. Yeah.
issues.
Okay, so animal control update. Did you get to have anything because of the snow, or?
Actually, we had. I had an interview on Saturday with our existing animal control officer.
Okay.
And I spent about 2 hours with her, and it was a really good interview. And we're at the point now where we've done our due diligence with respect to the laws. We've talked to people at the state level, the county level. I actually even called an animal control officer that's employed by Washington Township full-time as an animal control officer to pick his brain on what we should be looking at and, you know, everything, just corroborated everything that we know to date. So we're at the point now where we want to move forward with the interviews. We had two set up for last night. Obviously, they got canceled. But at this point, because there seems to be, I don't want to say a lack of trust, but we have a subcommittee that was put together to study this situation, and it was agreed that the subcommittee would come forward with recommendations.
Right.
And you know, pick somebody. But I sense that there is, you want to have more involvement. The rest of the committee wants to have more involvement. So we're going to offer that you want to come to the interviews, that's fine.
Well, if it's that scenario, then we'd have to make it, if there's more than mm-hmm. three people, then it has to be made notice. So that's the whole point of being a subcommittee.
Well, that's what I was going to ask Dick. How could that be handled? Because it's a contract negotiation, sort of. Can you handle it in executive or as an executive type session?
I think you could interview in an executive session, but you have to notice. You have to give them notice so the paper Karen would take care of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to you guys. What I'm trying to avoid is having inefficiency in this whole process where you have a subcommittee. Why appoint a subcommittee if you're not going to trust the judgment of that subcommittee?
I have no interest in being a part of the interest person.
Okay.
But
well, my thoughts were if we get it down to it has to be three, is that what we want to interview?
Well, you're interviewed. I mean, we only had three, didn't we?
I have somebody else in mind, too. Okay. Right now I'm in talks with the ACO from Califon would be a really good fit for this township. And I've heard plenty about him, and I've actually watched him in action.
Do we want to discuss this publicly or this particular individual?
Well, no.
It's an individual.
I think what we're getting at is we want to follow maybe the protocol the way we've been doing for hiring for the police department, DPW, have the whole committee do the actual interview of the final candidates, and then
I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to see it any more than two. I mean,
you want it down to two?
Yeah. That's my thoughts. I mean,
two or three.
I wouldn't even say three.
Two applicants?
Yeah, like they weed it down to two that we would then interview.
What if some committee members may have concerns as to what those two would provide for the township, and do we need all that's being provided by those two? That discussion hasn't been talked about.
No, we can certainly do that.
Right, and that's what I was going to just emphasize as well. I completely trust the word trust has come up. I have full confidence in the subcommittee for interviewing and, you know, and reaching a recommendation on who to hire. I thought part of this was the scope, and if the scope is changing from the prior animal control officer, I think that could be discussed and just informed us.
I can tell you how the scope is changing from the existing animal control officer.
That'd be great.
Her contract says that she handles domestic dogs and cats. And when I talked to her, she said she handles only dogs that have been captured by the police department. So that's fine. But I asked her, how do you handle wildlife, situations involving rabies and wildlife? And she said, I'm totally able to do that, and it would just be another call-out fee as if it was a dog. So there, you're not getting any extra expense to have that expertise. So,
with wildlife,
with the situation, the whole stickler for me on this whole thing is when
I thought Fish and Game would handle
The Fish and Game will, if you have a nuisance problem, not a rabies situation. If you have a situation where you get a call out, Jack gets a call out, for example, that we have an animal that's suspected of having rabies. Chances are, most likely, it's going to be a bat, a raccoon, or a skunk. And in a situation like that, what ends up happening is the animal control officer is supposed to be the first person to, you know, to be able to tell the police they can shoot it. But the thing is that the police officer is in harm's way. They don't have rabies shots. Like the certified animal control officer has had a series of rabies shots. They have the equipment. They have the poles. They have the containment vehicle. our police officers cannot do decapitations in the field if they need to. Can you?
No, we are not going to do any decapitations. And you, if you venture into that, if the ACO does go out and respond and captures a sick animal, the testing is correct. It has to be decapitated, and the brain cells have to be examined.
Right.
The town would accrue that cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
And historically, what we've done is if we, you call the sick raccoon in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You walk up. If it runs, climbs a tree, and takes off, then it probably ain't that sick.
Right.
But if he's wandering around, foaming up, boom, we'll shoot it, bury it, dig a deep hole, bury it, throw a rock over the hole so no one can dig it up. The only time there really have been doing any testing lately, years ago they used to test everything, mm-hmm. 20, 25 years ago. Now, well, they're the only time they'll test it if there's human kind of contact.
Well, and that's what I yeah. wanted to let you know. That's what it's really about. If the ACO, they will do everything they can to investigate who's been bit, has a pet been bit, has anybody been bit. They do all the paperwork for that. If there is a situation where they think somebody's been bit, that's when the decapitation would be performed, because the county, I guess it is, won't take the body. They only want the head. They will not take the body. So if you had a situation, and again, is it going to happen? Chances are no, but it could. And you need to have somebody who can do that if you need it.
And that's a call out per charge?
Same as if it was a dog.
To the municipality.
Yes.
So, but the question we have right now, which is, I know something that Jack's been taking care of, is the whole quarantine issue of mm-hmm. Dog bites. How do we, I mean, with the individual, the company we have now, it's not something within their realm that they do. How do we?
Well, we've had, Karen, how many have you given me?
Oh, my gosh, a lot this year.
Between cats and dogs,
eight,
it's got to be
maybe?
8 to 10 since
last year, yeah, the end of last year.
Yeah. And they've all been bitten by one of their own animals. Your dog bites you, your cat bites you, you know, bites your neighbor or whatever. So it's a self-quarantine process. Instead of, you know, calling the ACO, come grab the dog for 10 days, you got a bill for 10 days for them to watch it, you can quarantine your own animal.
Right.
Mark, you take care of the dog, you feed it, you walk it, try to limit, you know, any contact with other family members. That's a quarantine. You can observe the dog or the cat, whatever it is, observe any change of behavior and stuff, and within 10 days, if one of you are sick, you're going to exhibit those signs. If not, you know, back in play. But to have an ACO or anybody, for that matter, to physically grab the dog, and we've been fortunate that we haven't. It's not like there was a dog running around, bit somebody, no one knows whose dog it is or anything like that. That's a different scenario. It's always been somebody's own pet has bitten them, or somebody that they knew got bit by their neighbor's dog, or so it's been a known that we've been able to control. And we haven't gone out and, you know, we tell them, lock your dog up, you watch it, or a cat, whatever. I'll call him back, you know, call us if there's a problem. I'll call back in 10 days, you know. I was lucky, he's alive, all right, good, carry on, and that's about it.
But is that a role that should be in yours or should be in the ACOs to actually do the follow-ups and the initial checks and stuff like that? I mean, that's...
Well,
that's where I got the opinion that the person we have, the company isn't doing that initial checks or the follow-ups or the paperwork.
The police
I've been
can
following
do that.
Up
the police can follow
it's
up on that.
Not, you know, okay. No heavy yeah. workload for them.
Yeah.
You know, I get on the phone and I can, you know, kind of like I said, maybe 10 of them in the past 6-8 months. I can do that. I don't mind.
Okay.
I like doing it. I like talking to people.
Okay.
But I'm not physically going to go grab someone's dog or cat for 10 days either.
No, I'm not.
Right. Can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, that I'm not looking for, but I just wanted to make sure that we weren't, you know, there was this disconnect with what happened last year with people not being reported, and you know, there wasn't the paperwork that wasn't done properly.
That's where you, I mean, you're taking a risk, you know, and I feel like I was put here to.
Yeah.
This is a risky area. Is there a good chance you're going to have somebody get bit by rabies? No. There is a chance, though, and when it happens, you don't want it back on the township that you didn't follow the right procedures, and they're not that difficult. And you need to have somebody. I mean, everybody that is state certified can do all of these things. But what I've been told is make sure that person has wildlife experience, not just a few things here and there. You don't want somebody from a county that doesn't have a lot of wildlife. And make sure that what was the other thing? I'm sort of like charge it up over this. Oh, response times.
You know, response times in emergencies. Not response times, you know, like for normal situations. But response times in an emergency, and especially an emergency like a situation that maybe somebody did get bit and the animal has rabies, it may look like it has distemper, but they still call somebody out to handle it. It's your judgment, though, with that.
What would be an adequate response time? Do you know what?
Yes, within less than an hour. And with 30 minutes, it's preferred.
So these ACOs that we have the applications for, some Lambertville, some Flemington, some Glengardner, some Hackettstown, they all can meet the requirements to be here in an hour.
Some can and some can't. And that's what I, and that, and see,
eliminate the can'ts?
No, because you know why? The reason I interviewed our current one is because her proposal said one thing, but I wanted to make sure maybe they do handle things better than they're saying in their proposal. So I wanted to make sure
The other follow-up question, since we're having this informal discussion that long overdue, is the impoundment. Where would the impoundment be?
Well, right now it's common sense for animals with our current.
Right, and in the future, where would it be?
The future depends on who we hire.
So if we take somebody out of the Lambertville area, the impoundment may be in Lambertville?
Well, in the case of if you take somebody that services Mansfield area, for example, or somebody that does Califon, they have a place in, I think it's Happy Tales. I forget where it is. It's up, it's Warren County, I believe.
Hackettstown.
Yeah, so, and the thing is that what I'm finding is that not every ACO has access to every single impoundment facility. Some like to work with certain ACOs and some don't, and it's a very complex situation, and we may be able to choose our impoundment facility, but then the ACO we choose is not accepted at that facility.
I just think it would be a little bit of a burden on locals to have to drive that far to pick their dog up. It's one of my concerns. Mm-hmm. The other concern I have that I'd like to talk about is livestock. Mm-hmm. I know there was a discussion about livestock. What is the subcommittee's feeling as to what we should do with livestock?
What I think we should do is just what I think Jack and what they're doing is they know all the farms in the area. The first thing they do when somebody's loose is...
So we would need an ACO with a livestock ability.
Yes, or in a case of there was an emergency on the road, for example, say like a trailer overturns, then you might want to get CART involved, which is the,
response.
Right. Okay. So, but like, for example, I don't know, you heard about what happened this week, right? I got a call. I was on 78, and I get a call that there are cows loose on Forge Hill Road, and they thought they were mine. They weren't, and because I just left there, and Ron was home, so I called him. And I said, I bet you it's Randy's up. Well, I bet you it's somebody's up the road. Just right there. So anyway, so he goes, I'm going to go up there. He gets there, my husband. There's nobody home. The whole herd is out on Forge Hill Road and across Forge Hill Road. Now, my husband knows cows. He knew what to do. But he couldn't, he got them off of Forge Hill Road because people were calling in saying there are cows. And you know how they speed on that road. Well, you don't know, but I know. You know, and it's just one of those situations where you try to handle it locally if you can. And so in the meantime, he happened to have the person's cell phone number. He called them. They happened to be on their way home. So together they worked it. One of your officers were there. Done. In.
Sounds like agritourism here.
Yeah, exactly. So, these situations exist. I witnessed probably 15 years ago somebody in a park get severely injured by an animal that they, the do-gooders. Again, you've got these people moving in from out of this area. They don't understand livestock. They think, cute, come here, you know. Yeah. And I saw this person have a bag of popcorn and go to try to feed this thing that was so cute and coming towards him. And the thing just jumped up, grabbed the bag of popcorn, scraped it. There was blood everywhere. You know, I mean, so I've seen this firsthand. And I understand that was 15 years ago, and it may never happen again, but it may happen again. You have to have somebody who is able to do this. Now, all of these ACOs can do this, and again, it's really us coordinating the expense on
I
the whole thing.
Some of them only handled the list you gave.
That's what they
and
said.
Cats, and there was two that kind of handled it all. One was a blank price of this to do everything. The other one was this, but there's extras here, and then there was two that would just handle cats and dogs, but you're saying all four of those would?
I didn't get to, I have an interview, the one that was supposed to be interviewed Tuesday night, along with one of the full service, which I know does it all, mm-hmm. we canceled the interview, till I have to make another interview. Right. But the thing is that the one that we currently have, her proposal was not complete. She is willing to do that, the additional work, the wildlife piece. However, it's just going to be another call-out fee. It's going to be like it was another dog incident. So whether we have an incident or don't have an incident, it doesn't change her contract price.
So when we started this, the assumption was when, you know, when it came up in January to renew her contract,
mm-hmm.
the word was she didn't offer everything we needed. But you've now confirmed she's as much in the running as anybody.
That's what it sounds like. Now, from what I hear, there were some contract issues. There was something that happened. She went out to get a cat.
Okay. Do we not want to talk about an individual?
All right. Okay. No, I'm glad you're here. I feel like we're an executive because...
Yeah. It just, if you could say a candidate or just make sure it's somebody can't identify, because I don't think we should be talking.
There was a candidate. There was a misunderstanding twice with two different situations. And I wasn't here. I don't, you know, I'm not sure why we are going out for another interview. Maybe you can provide more, you know, more background.
And you can go into executive session to talk about,
I think
you know,
get skirting on issues, but I think we should on this conversation.
That's probably good, because all I know is that the assignment was that we need to go to hire an ACO.
Right.
So we should look at it. But the thing is again, how do you hire an ACO when you don't know what the township needs are, when you don't know what the laws are? I spent the time. I did the due diligence. I actually, you guys have had the statute since January 10th or whatever it is. I sent them out to everybody. You can read them for yourselves just like I did. I spent 2 hours reading every single statute.
I have two. I have a folder of everything that has been passed out to me. I've been reading it, so I have read everything that you've passed out.
Even the ones back from January?
Oh, yeah, they're dark.
You know, and I mean,
I just... I interesting one on cruelty to animals that dates way back to 1709.
Mm.
And here's one I found that very simply helps a rabies situation. You can be passed out, hung up here.
Well,
know.
And this is, I'm looking at this.
There are simple solutions, that's all I'm saying, but we need to put our heads
together. Yeah, but there are simple solutions, but you know, when you have that incident that happens, you have to have somebody who can respond to that incident, and Jack can...
In regards, going back to livestock quickly, in this conversation Jack was part of too, one of our concerns was... you have a horse or a cow, steer, whatever, gets hit, is in the road, has to be put down by the vet. We don't know whose it is. We can't get a hold of nobody. The vet has to put it down. There's going to be a cost involved, and we just wanted to make sure we could recoup that cost for the vet or whoever needs to come and actually, with a machine, I guess, move that animal off the road properly. So that was our idea behind amending and adding that livestock into the the dog. So that's
I know to
why we brought that point.
Tom's point is like if you have a cow, it's worth money. You're most likely gonna know if it's yours or not. But I know like DNL, like I lost a llama, it was $250
who knows
to have take away. So
they might have a real job during the day, and they don't know the animal's out, and we don't know whose it is.
Yeah. And you know what it is? There's so many facets to this. Believe me, I didn't go into it. If I thought this was what was involved, I don't even know if I would have volunteered to be on this thing.
Oh, you were voluntold.
Once you know.
Well, you could talk about, certainly, as a matter of fact, you should be talking about.
Is that something the township wants to get involved
in? No, I didn't say that. In the executive summary, what I said is we have to make a decision on where we stand with that. Do we want to just continue to use the SPCA?
Yes, we do.
Yes, okay. I know, but I'm just saying these are the things, because you know what's happening right now? The FBI is collecting information on cruelty incidents. So you want to make... I'm telling you, I'm saying?
I
know that you guys are frustrated with me because you don't understand the amount of time I put into this.
Oh, we do.
And I'm trying to communicate it, and maybe I over-communicated to you. And I was going to present it in a manner, but you guys jumped on me and wouldn't let me talk about the topic at the meeting and hijacked my meeting. And it's rude. So I'm at the point where you form a subcommittee, you let the subcommittee do their job, or else you're micromanaging that subcommittee for whatever reason, your own insecurities or the fact that you don't trust what's being done. But let us do our job.
Can I ask a related question?
No, I'm not done yet. And you're never going to get another question. Never going to get a chance to interrupt me again. So, anyway, it's just that we have to work as a team. There's not one person on this team that's the smartest person in the room. We all have our talents, and I volunteered for this. Brian volunteered for this. We're doing a great job together. Jack's been involved.
Debbie's doing an outstanding job.
Everybody's been involved. I'm trying to get everybody information, and I feel like I'm just being submarined.
Can't keep up with her.
You know, I mean, it's like I'm trying to get you what you need. I manage to a tight budget. I don't want to be spending money. I don't want to have Jack go out and an ACO go out on a thing that's a distemper call. It's just you have to have that experience. You have to know when to call out that experience versus using the police. And I'm trying to do this in a way so that we get what we need, but then we manage our budget. And I also think it's bigger than just picking an animal control officer. I think that we need to educate the people, not just by putting a flyer out there. How many people really come out there? Sometimes you have to spoon feed people. Maybe it's an article in the newsletter on feral cats. Maybe it's a seminar here and when to call for nuisance wildlife. Like, if you go out to Mansfield's website or Washington Township's website, what you'll end up seeing is it's such a usable site. Here's the animal control officer. If you have this problem, call this. If you have this, call this. If you have this, call this. If you have this. We don't have that. That's the kind of place I want to get to, but it's all got to be done in phases. That's where I'm at. And I'm done. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Well, I do. I want to bring another. You mentioned budget a couple times. Now, the budget, the way I understand it, is in the dog licensing. That's how the ACO will be paid. So there's not. It's not in the budget. It's removed from the budget. It's an in-house trust account that will cover the cost of an ACO, is the way I understood it at the budget meeting.
Okay.
Correct.
So if you, just FYI.
Yeah. Depending on how much it costs, but yes, that certainly.
That's right. That's what we were told.
Yep.
Well, what were we paying?
There's no budget.
St. Hubert?
Other than the salary.
Hunter and Humane?
Yeah.
Right now we're paying $200 a month minimum.
We paid about $4,700 in fees last year.
Yeah.
Now, I've been told by a very, very experienced animal control officer that this township should not be paying more than $5,000 a year. And that's the number I'm working with. And we can kick one of them off the list because I don't want to get involved in some of the stuff that I've seen in the papers.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the other townships are doing the same thing. So that leaves... That leaves about three right now that I want to interview.
5,000 plus call out.
No.
5,000
altogether.
Yes.
Whether it's an annual contract or whether it's or the way the one is set up now, that's it's coming in about 4,700 unless you have some ridiculous amount of loose dogs that Jack can't get a hold of.
That's what it was last year, 4,700?
Yeah, about that. That was
okay.
Yeah.
And to be honest, we limited a lot of those calls. The problem is if you put it on a website and they call, then that in turn is going to generate a lot more calls because a lot of them we intercept.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get the call and we'll go, we'll look through the book. Okay, I got a phone number, I got a license, I got a tag, a description, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try to marry them back up before the ACO gets called out. And the only time we've ever called her out is we have a dog.
Right.
Or you know, Jim calls, he's got a dog. No idea whose it is, go to that location, come to this location, whatever, and take custody of that dog, and we'll try to figure it out from there.
Yeah, and that's exactly how we have to operate going forward. We talked about this. That's the way to do it. That's the way to control your cost. Everything goes through you, and you make that judgment call on when the ACO is needed. But if it's a situation involving somebody bit by an animal that looks like they're rabid, I'm just imploring us that we have to send the ACO out in a case like that. You might not have it for 5 years, but if it happens, you don't want to have this township facing a lawsuit of some sort because somebody went out there, was bit, and then later the animal was shot. There's no head, or they have to go through the rabies test or the rabies shots, you know, because they don't have the head to examine. I don't want to see something come back on the township like that. So,
may I ask my related question?
Yes.
The list that you're talking about comes from the dog census.
Yes, Kim sends one down. Yeah.
Currently, we don't have a person doing our dog census.
Well, we had our licenses.
Licenses we do, but didn't we have a separate dog census person?
Well, yeah. The ACO can do, there's one ACO that can do
those
that. And they
that's
will,
my question.
Yeah,
do we,
and they
do we
will
want
do
the
it.
ACO to do that, or do we want to have a separate in-house dog census person replace the prior person?
I mean, well, she did.
There are people in town that would be willing, and I spoke to Karen about this, willing to offer their help as the old dog catcher, let's call it, that are interested in helping the township in certain ways. But I've been told that they may have to be certified or whatever, so the local help, even impoundment locally, is a consideration. But the ACO would have to be an agreement between the local individual and the ACO. But there are people in town that would be willing to use Facebook now, know most of the dogs in town, so forth and so on. I spoke to you briefly about
yes.
it. I believe,
yeah.
That person that you're speaking of will happen
to county certification they have to acquire. Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting. Once you choose an ACO, I guess then the
good question again.
Would be between the ACO and the individual, the way I understand it.
Okay.
Does that individual, were they willing to take an insurance policy out to cover the township should they get bit?
Maybe.
Because
you know.
The reason the ACO, I found out, takes out that $1 million policy, it's to cover a couple of situations. Somebody's show dog, for example, gets picked up. They get in a car accident with the dog, and the dog dies. That's a liability right there that the township won't have to deal with because the ACO has insurance. The other thing is if the ACO themselves gets bit, the rabies shots, I guess apparently for the ones that you have to – the ones that they get in advance, it's like a workers' comp thing. It's like $20,000 or something for rabies shots. So I don't know. They said it's the same thing they give to a dog, but for some reason when you're giving it to a human, it costs more.
The person, the individual, was hired by the town to do the census. Would not the person be under the township's policy then in a dog census? And wouldn't there be the ability to have an addendum to the insurance, which Bev is talking about? I mean, this is way, we're reaching way out there.
I mean,
the idea was to keep something local, impoundment possibly local for the local people on the issues that aren't a bite or vicious dog, that's a dog wandering. Just a thought.
Yeah, and again, this is why it's so confusing. It's almost like it requires a three-hour presentation. There are so many facets to this. I know more about animal control now than I ever wanted to know. And I'm just trying to do right by the township. I'm not trying to overcomplicate things, and it's very frustrating when you hear, don't make it complex. Well, you don't see what I just read. You're not talking to these people at the state or the people at the county, even at the health department, that are talking about situations. And I'm trying to get this done as soon as possible. There's no rush. We have somebody now that I know can do what we need until we decide to make a change. But I think we should just... If you want, we can interview them all together because I know that you want a report, Tom, a full report. I mean, I don't know what I can give you that matrix I put together that tears apart all the contracts and lays out what they offer, when they respond, how many officers they have, are they humane, do they euthanize, you know, so that
well,
they...
Well, in their agreement with the township, that should be all spelled out to everyone, shouldn't it?
Yeah, but you wanted a full report.
Well, that would be a report. Their report.
A contract.
Their contract.
Okay, that's it then. If you guys make the call, because I just want to move forward with this. I don't want any more inefficiency, second guessing, public displays, things that should be kept in house, talking in the public about them. I feel like you guys sat there with me for 15 minutes before that Board of Health meeting, and you could have said one thing to me. Is this something we're going to decide tonight? And I would have said, no, I'm going to walk you through it. But instead, it was like a tag team, you know, and it's so unproductive, and we're better than that. And I haven't cried over it yet, but I feel like I want to. But that's all I have to say tonight.
Well, thank you, Bev. I appreciate it. So you were going to those schedule interviews with the two other people?
I've got the one from Clinton. He's available usually 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's the thing. These people are really busy too, and that's why I'd rather you know, get as many people there as we can, but you don't want to keep pushing this out because this one can't make it and that one can't make it. So just let me know. Do you guys want to be involved in the interview process? I have no problem if you want to be involved at this point. It would actually make my life easier. No. But it's up to you.
I'm in.
Sorry, Brian. I'm talking for me tonight. I don't want you thinking I'm talking for Brian, and I should have said that for Brian.
No, that's okay.
You know, I keep
saying
the subcommittee, the subcommittee, the subcommittee, the subcommittee. Well,
I'm having a hard time keeping up with you. You're doing an awesome job. There's a lot more to it than I ever would have imagined. Because, you know, we've been just assuming that we're covered, liability, we're covered. We've just kind of been going along thinking everything's fine. But the more we learn, the more we realize we got to be a little more careful about our exposure and liability. And I think it looks like we can do that and still keep us in our general pricing area that we're accustomed to paying. Actually, might even be a little less.
Right.
It could work out. So we're just trying to make sure that, we're protected, period. That's our main goal here.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want things that we don't want more than we need. I mean, we don't have a huge populace that's, you know, dogs and cats are running free. And, I mean, if there's items that, you know, my big concern in bringing this up when we had the issue is, you know, a lot of that turned over to you as far as responsibilities because the impression was these items were getting done. Mm-hmm. Quarantine checks were being done previously, and they weren't. So
I can't answer that question.
You know, and that's what kind of stemmed a lot of this concern, you know. And so that's when it got turned over to you. If it's something that you have no issue making the phone calls and checking with the people, and, I mean, if that's something that... then great, you know, then that solves one area of the
seems to be our best asset right now as far as controlling our possible overrun with costs.
Right.
Running
and I have no problem doing that. It's, you know, I don't know how many were reported over the years. Because it seems like the reporting has now changed too. The county, if somebody goes to the hospital, that's when the reports come. They go to the hospital, I got bit. They call County Board of Health. County Board of Health generates reports, sends it to Karen. Karen calls me, sends it down to me. That's the big circle that comes. And, you know, I have no problems running out, seeing people. How's your hand? How's your foot? Whatever. Making a phone call, you know, keep an eye on it. I'll call you back in like 8-10 days, see how things are going for you. I can do that. That's not a big deal. Not to, you know, try to circumvent anything you did. I've seen your reports and all the research you did, Beverly. It's eye-opening, all the requirements that the state's kind of force-feeding everybody. I had no idea there was that much to it. I'm thinking the same thing. And, you know, it's a dog. It's Karen's dog. I hang on to it while we're going for work, whatever. But as far as, you know, quick follow-up call, again, it's been 10 and 8 months, so it's not a heavy lift or anything.
Right. Well, I mean, like I said, that was the big driving force in this, of the issues that came behind it and things that weren't being done. And then, so, I mean, if that's an item that's essentially then on that list of what you're dealing with that doesn't have to be dealt with, which I think is a lot of what these other more contractor-based companies are about, is like taking that animal, the costs involved with taking it, quarantining it, watching it.
Yeah, no, I would never go for that because
right.
that's why if you look at my executive summary,
right.
which I didn't get a chance to go through that night, it talks about community. And good relations with the community. That is what Jack is doing. Good
right.
relations with the community.
Right.
And the only time that I would request a follow-up in person is if a dog has bit a person or somebody else's pet. It's not enough to just make a phone call to say, is the dog doing okay? You really have to send somebody out there to just look at it after 7 or 10 days, whatever. Because, you know, it's one thing if they're vicious, but they haven't bitten anybody. But if they've bitten somebody, you have to.
And not to beat a dead horse, but with the livestock that I brought up at that Board of Health meeting, I mean, we're just trying to educate you that there's a little more concern out there. We're not making any decision. I mean,
no.
it's a committee decision.
I think you'll leave livestock alone the way it is.
Well, that's fine. It doesn't. However it rolls is fine with me, but we're just trying to bring that point up. Just try to show you that, you know, there is a couple other things we should be maybe aware of.
Yeah. And let me tell you something, Tom. We had a situation a couple of years ago at our house where a person went through the high tensile fence on an icy road on a day like this. There's a bull in that pasture. Had that bull gotten out, I wouldn't want Jack or my husband, Randy up the road, to have to deal with that situation. In a case like that, I don't even know if you have the caliber to kill something like that. Maybe you do, but it's a situation that could be really... I live it. I see it, you know? And I just... Again, I'm not an alarmist, but I like to be prepared. I'm just the type... I'm protecting the people. I'm protecting... The residents include the people, the pets, the police department that doesn't have rabies shots in advance of what they're walking into. They don't know what they're walking into. Bats in the house. If you have animals like that, I mean, you really have to use your judgment on getting the ACO out if somebody's been bitten.
I had a bat in my house not too long ago. Climbed through the chimney, crossed the eave, and came out on old timber. And I didn't notice it for a couple of days. And I had a tennis racket. Bink. Handed a bat.
Did you pick it up? Did you have cuts on your hand when you picked it up? Well, and you know.
I was working on my house, and I reached up, and there was a bat, and pulled his wings out and let him go.
They said that August seems to be the time when if you start to see a lot.
Sometimes it seems like it's the worst-case scenario every time. I don't know.
What, with me?
Every day you wake up, you're going to have a take a chance. Every day. So I'm just not so sure. Livestock, you...
You have to,
but we just have to investigate. I believe we have to at least do our due diligence to make sure it isn't an issue.
And the thing is that you don't want it coming back on the township. You don't want your residents hurt. And I'm not saying you're going to send these people out. What I'm saying, unless it's required by law, what I'm saying is we need somebody who, if they can't handle it, they've got the network into CART, for example, the County Area Rescue, which is made up of volunteer veterinarians, volunteer people with trailers that can come out. You don't want it to be one of these, oh, my God, what do we do situations. And that's how I look at a project. I look at the whole thing because I'm used to protecting a business. When I worked at AT&T, that's what we did. We tried to get ahead of things. We weren't reactive. We were proactive. And it's in my DNA. I have to look at things that way.
I got a question. What do you guys think about the date for the township volunteer picnic?
I'll get into that, too. one more thing. I just want to bring up one more thing, and this is with for Dick. Part of the kerfuffle that happened at the Board of Health meeting was related to Tara providing advice that we could put the Board of Health, that we can put animal control under Board of Health. So based on that, it was in the minutes. We all approved the minutes that we were moving forward. Then you come in, unbeknownst to probably what she had decided.
Correct.
And said it's back on township, and really nobody had specifics as to why we were doing it either way, and I've learned a little bit more about that since then. But the thing is I would appreciate if you guys would talk to each other, or if she's not sure of an answer, have her say, I'll get back to you. Because what I did was, and this is my, I'm not saying I want to meddle, and I understand it was my vacation and I chose to do what I did, but I raced to make a 3-1 deadline for that Board of Health with my sister yelling at me, everybody yelling at me because I was working on vacation. Mm-hmm. And then I come back here and I get submarined by people I think are somewhat my friends besides. And it just the whole thing started because of that. I was racing to meet a 3-1 deadline because I never thought I'd get it until April 1st because it's my own inexperience, and I just thought people would be a little more tolerant. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you want to move on to picnics?
Well, let me answer the one I want your answer for you is, are we all comfortable with the subcommittee going forward with the interviews and coming forward with a recommendation for two companies, or does the committee want, the whole committee want to be involved in the interview process?
So it's two sets of interviews. In other words, we'll interview, get it down to two. You guys.
Well, or do we bring two back to us with recommendations of what they do, and then we can decide if we want to do another interview of them, or if we're satisfied with the information you bring back. I mean. Me, I personally would probably be fine with the information you brought back of what's the pros and cons of this company, what's the pros and cons of this company.
I would as well.
That would be my choice. I wouldn't want to be another interview, and it would complicate matters by having three people there from the committee to having to make it noticed and everything like that. So I'm fine with it. Tom, it's, Up to you.
I have no comment.
Okay. So is that...
I have no comment.
Okay. So, then proceed.
I'm annoyed where this meeting is gone already. So I'll just stay where I am, in my little space, and we'll move forward. Let's go on to the next thing. We spent enough time on this.
Okay. Well, we move forward.
All right. So, at this point, we originally had a motion to have the committee approve July 29th as the volunteer picnic date. Some new information came up that the same weekend as last year's picnic, July or June 10th, is now open. So based on some of the comments I heard from the public and some other people that, oh, it's vacation time and everything, it made sense to me we would amend the motion, I guess, because you can't reconsider it because it's not the same meeting. So you'd have to amend the motion, right?
Yeah. That's fine. Or you can just change the date from, make a motion to change the date from July 29th to June 10th.
Okay, yeah. So that's what
I'm
going
to do. I think that would
be, right.
How does that sound to everybody, the 10th of?
It's fine with me.
Mike?
Good to me.
Tom?
I'll make the motion to change the date for the Township Volunteer Picnic from July 29, 2017 to June 10th, 2017.
I will second that.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 And along with that, we have to, the committee can put forth some people they might want to invite that are outside of the volunteers. I don't know if you need to know from me who is on the volunteer list so that you can make any recommendations on who else to invite. But we don't have to do it here. I'm just telling you.
I mean, last year we had done it for 1 year because of Pat. But I don't think we really did anything outside of it last year.
Well, I had just mentioned to Bev that sometimes the committee is aware of volunteers who contributed during the year that maybe we're
not
aware of.
Oh, that volunteer, yes. That weren't early on a committee or anything like that.
Like 1 year, Fred T. Meyer did electrical work that we weren't aware of, so he was invited because someone was aware. So if there's anyone like that.
Or like Chris doing the plans for the historians.
Sure.
Sure, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, yep, just like that.
That's a good point. Yeah. That is the really
you know, annually we have different people who do contribute, so that's...
Okay.
I'm sorry, did we set a time for that?
Oh, no, we
didn't know. No, I don't know. What time did you do last year? Everything worked out beautifully last year. Your music, your time, everything was great. So
I forget what
I think we should just duplicate it. Maybe even your cue guy, BBQ. I even have all the list of the same, the alcohols and everything, so I know.
Well, what time do you usually do that?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I can't remember
was
either.
Was it 2? Or was it later?
No, it was a little later.
I'll look
I think
it
might have started at 4, dinner at 5.
Yeah, because they got because I met the cue crew at there at noon to set up. Initially, for them to set up. So I knew it was after that. So
4?
I'll look it up for the minutes from last year.
Okay, yeah, we don't need to make a motion for that.
Okay. Yeah. So, Jack, your turn.
Yes. All right. The prescription drop box. Back over the summer, I had mentioned to you my thoughts about it, and I made some inquiries into it. Kind of started jumping through all the hoops that the state and the feds required with the prescription drop box, the medicine drop box program. I don't know if everybody's familiar with it. It is a program to try to get the prescription drugs off the street, unused prescription drugs off the street, out of the houses, out of the landfills, out of our waterways and stuff. So the State Attorney General's office, through the Department of Consumer Affairs, orchestrates this program, and they set regulations. I'd applied to the DEA for a waiver for the handling of the drugs, had to adopt their policy on how it's going to be handled, typically handled just as it would be as evidence. We have two officers that would be assigned to it. They would bag it once the box is full. They would bag it, weigh it. The contraband is weigh it all, tag it, and send it down to the prosecutor's office. They would hold it until just about every 5 or 6 months. They have they'll ship it out, and it'll be destroyed by the DEA. There's been about 30 tons that have gone down to the DEA last year through all the boxes that they have throughout the state.
Initially, there was going to be a cost of $890, and that's why I kind of like pulled the reins back a bit, got every, you know, got all the paperwork in order, and had the rep from the DEA come out and did a site assessment. We would be able to accommodate a box downstairs. And I said, okay, you know, I have everything in order. I comply with their policies. The waiver was done, the site assessment. And I said, all right, I'll talk to my committee about the financing aspect of it. Last week, 2 weeks ago, Doug Collier, he's the rep from the Consumer Affairs, he called me up, says, are you guys still interested in that? I said, yeah, I very much am, because it also gives us green points for sustainability and everything. He said, well, I'm playing Santa Claus. The state, our budget came through. I will cover the cost of the box if you still want that box. So I said, push the button. No cost to us. Get it going. So in about 2 months, the box is, it'll be, look like the old style mailboxes, like roadside, the big blue ones.
Mm-hmm.
This will be different color. I have our Lebanon Township logo on it and the patch and, you know, and all the all the paperwork that comes along to promote the process and stuff. They'll put it out on a newsletter that Lebanon Township now is a partner in partnership with the state and trying to, you know, eradicate the unwanted drugs and stuff like that. So it's kind of a win-win for us.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of calls over the years. Hey, we have this, you know, grandma passed and I got all these drugs. What can we do with these? You'd have to always send them down to the county. Now we'll be able to accommodate. There's also, I'll have a transport box to where we can have days to where we can go to the senior center or something like that, down to Bunville or to the nursing home, stuff like that. Once every month, once every couple months, promote it again to go to these locations where they're not so easy to get here and pick them up at those locations. So.
Where do they eventually go to once you hold it, your capacity's filled? What happens then?
All right, the box, we've all kind of got an idea in the box. It's a bag that goes inside a container within, which is secured. It's anchored to the ground. The integrity, you know, and the security of the box is in place. An officer will unlock the box, remove it. It's in a big bag inside. They'll wrap it up, tag it, tape it all up, weigh it, just as if it were evidence for court proceedings. Take it down to the prosecutor's office. They have a holding cell where they hold it there. So depending upon how frequently the box is used, and we can kind of eyeball and gauge and stuff like that. When the bag's full, we take it out. Put a new bag in, just like changing the garbage, you know. They hold it down there, and once their cell down there gets full, then they make the call. So once it's out of here and down there, it's out of our hands.
Right.
Yeah.
You get a new bag or the same bag?
No, new bag. Uh-huh. No, because it all gets wrapped up, right, taped up very securely, and that was part of the policy that we had to enact, just how officers will handle this. You know, again, with gloves, you know, there's specific techniques because you don't always know what they're putting in there. There could be some narcotics or something like that in there. The sharps, the needles, the old needles and stuff like that could be thrown in there. So we can't. And they don't want you to regulate what's put in there. They want you to just kind of observe the integrity that no one's trying to take out. But we can't, you know, say, what are you putting in there? I need to see what you're putting in there. Now, they're trying to deter that.
Right.
Because the idea is to get it off the street. If they want to throw drugs in there of any kind of narcotics, fine. It's in there. We got control of it. They don't.
Okay.
So, like I said, it's a win-win for all of us because it's getting drugs off of the streets that I'm not going to have to deal with a kid that's opiate dependent and now going on to heroin or fentanyl or something like that. The township gets the points for, you know, for the green points and stuff. And
we should maybe try to, when we have it set up, going, get that in the paper, get that in the newsletter, get that out.
Well, that's there. I don't know if the EOSC know about that you got this yet or is getting this or going to be getting this?
Like I said, Barry, okay. I just pushed the button last week on when he called me and told me that they had the finances to get the box for us.
Because once we have it and or know a good date of when it, then obviously Warren's going to have to get it installed and everything along that lines. And because part of that program for the Sustainable New Jersey is to promote it and have like a collection day. So, you know, that to have a day that, you know, and then we can promote the box and everything that it's there, but have a specifically a collection day, you know, for the community, and then they have to kind of show that they've done that
to get to earn those points and have a location then for it. So once we have a better idea
like a
of when
opening,
it's
you know,
right, exactly.
Papers and on our board out here.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. And they could have a date here that there would be an officer there that you know because when it's an open scenario where you're that you have to have the officer there.
Or new sign eventually.
Yeah. There. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I have talked with Warren. Showed him where you know as far as securing it because they will. They ordered a box through Wisconsin. It gets shipped to the DEA, and they once it gets down there, it gets all the paraphernalia together with it. They will bring it here, transport it here. Here's your box. You got to install it. I already talked to Warren, showed him where. He's no problem.
And where were you thinking of having it put?
Right inside of our front vestibule when you come in. That's that bench that's in there right now.
So in the building.
Yeah, it has to be inside the building.
Okay.
It has to be in a secured environment. And it has access 24/7, which we do have because we're here 24/7. The door's not always open, but if someone calls, say, hey, can I drop off medicine at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll have an officer meet you there.
Gotcha.
They come open the door, they drop it, and then they're back out. Mm.
So, okay.
It has to be a secured environment.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Welcome. My pleasure.
While we got you here, did you make any progress on the
traffic studies?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I had back in the fall, again, at your request, I had put out my traffic counters. And we had it out, had them out for about 5 weeks. We pulled them up in December, you know, prior to winter coming and stuff because you can't leave it out there with the salt and the plows and everything else. So this was like step one of even look into the possibility of establishing a residential suburban speed limit ordinance. We did the 5 roads here and got some interesting results. First road we do is Mount Grove Road because that was the newest road as far as resurfacing and conditioning and stuff like that. I had an average daily vehicles of about 300 a day. In the whole time of the study, there was 1,500 vehicles, and that's both eastbound, westbound, about the same amount of numbers, off about 5. Had a maximum, one maximum speed of 82 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, at 11 o'clock.
Wow.
11 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. The average speed is at 37, but between 40 and 50 miles an hour is almost 40% of the vehicles are doing, you know, 40 to 50 miles an hour. A couple at 10% at over 50 miles an hour. So for that road there alone, again, the maximum speed 82, the average speed was 37, and that was for a 5-day study. Rocky Run Road.
Jack, the legal speed right there now is 50?
The legal speed, since it's not posted, it's a residential road, yes, 50 miles an hour.
Was that on which side of Hoffman's
that
Crossing?
That was between Hoffman's Crossing and Cokesbury Road, about 0.2 mile in from Cokesbury Road, trying to put it in somewhat of an obscure area so people won't. That's why we never put, you know, your speed on a sign here because, cool, I want to see how fast I can go.
Right.
They'll do the same thing with these. So we try to put it in an area where, like, boom, what was that? You're running over. You don't even know.
Right.
But, yeah, all these roads, like, none are posted, so they're 50 miles an hour. Rocky Run Road, the average speed there was 37 miles an hour. They had a total of 1,183 westbound, 1,382 eastbound. So we have a daily average of 366 vehicles a day on Rocky Run Road. The maximum speed there was 66 miles an hour. And again, the averages are falling right around that 35. This is 36 miles an hour. But we're looking at almost 35% are traveling at 45 or more. So that's, you know, that's, you have that outlier of being, you know, 66. And we have one at 7 miles an hour. It's probably someone under a tractor going up the road. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, your average speeds on some of these days were in 50, 58. You know, 66 was that, you know, that outlier that was way up there.
That was Rocky Run on 7
Rocky
mile
Run
an hour?
Road.
Maybe that was wrong with a load of hay or something.
Yeah, the Milkowski pulling a wagon up the road. Yeah. But again, you had 2,500 vehicles for that week-long period we were up there, which is a decent amount of traffic. You know, you wouldn't think 2,500 cars in a week up there. McKenzie Road. McKenzie Road, the average speed is 33 miles an hour. Had an average daily traffic rate of 540 cars a day. For the week-long period, it was 2,716 vehicles. The low speed was 10. The high was 90.
Wow.
90 miles. And that's why, Jason, that thing messed up. No. We calibrated right before we put it out there. Every time he pulled it up, that's why there would be a day or two between each of these different roads. Come in, download all the data into the computer and stuff, and all the checks came back. It's working properly. That was 11 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday afternoon too. 90 miles an hour. The average speed there is again 33, with the majority falling between 30 and 40 miles an hour. Almost 60% of the vehicles between 30 and 40. So, I mean, the average is doing good, but again, like you say, it's 50 miles an hour. 50 on some of these roads is exceedingly too fast. 90 is way too fast. If we stop at 90, we're writing reckless driving and stuff. We're writing all kinds of stuff for that kid. But if that kid's also doing 55, 60 miles an hour, he's only doing 10 over the speed limit, which the courts really don't like, you coming in with 10 miles an hour over the speed limit summonses. So I think some of these roads would definitely benefit by having a posted speed limit of 35 miles an hour as far as us being able to enforce it. If it's posted 35 by statute, we can enforce that. Again, if it's unposted, it's 50, the traffic can kind of, you know, go about its way. The other Mount Airy Road, 1,300 vehicles for the week-long period, and this put me into December. That's when we took them off the road because of the weather getting colder. 217 vehicles daily. Average speed, 34. The max was 65 miles an hour on Mount Airy Road. This one on Mount Airy was on the lower end. Again, trying to, you know, keep it in an obscured area, but out of any curves or anything like that, nothing that's going to really skew the data. And the average speeds up there, we had almost 59% were between 30 and 40 miles an hour. So a good portion of it falls within, you know, that speed limit, the desirable limit, you know, 30 to 40 miles an hour. And then you had like 6% exceeded 50 miles an hour. So is there a need for it? I know a lot of people on Rocky Run Road and some of the other roads sitting there when they're walking up the road or getting their mail and a car comes by, if it's doing 35 or 50 miles an hour, it looks like it's way too fast. We could definitely benefit from having it. I think it would reduce some of the speed, especially these higher numbers. The idiot's doing 90 miles an hour, you know, the only way he's going to stop is when he gets caught.
Yeah.
Because obviously he just doesn't realize that he's just doing over speed limit. That's the first step in doing that. The next step in working on an ordinance, township engineer would have to get involved. They would have to do a study on the roads, length, widths, grades, and all, you know, their engineer study to it. Then it would have to be submitted to DOT for an approval. So what that would entail price-wise and stuff and workload, I don't know. But, you know, as far as what we can do.
How many roads were there then?
We did five, and the other one, it was, we did the main road, Mount Grove,
right.
McKenzie, Mount Grove, Rocky Run, and the other one was a lien that he did just to they didn't even bring that data up because it was insignificant, and it was basically to try to, you know, just let's get this out and see what we can capture on it.
Right.
So the other roads that are non-posted are really not going to be instrumental in these studies
traffic
because of the makeup of the road and stuff like that.
So just wanted to hit the bigger roads to get an idea of what we were looking at. A couple thousand vehicles a week, you know.
Right.
The engineering study would have to cover all the other roads?
They would have to go out and cover, do an engineer study. I don't know whether it be just whatever the township engineer already has on these roads, but some of the roads he would have to go out and physically measure width, grade, you know, characteristics and stuff like that.
But you studied the five bigger roads. How many other roads are there? I'm just wondering if the engineering study has to go to the... I mean, you said they'd be insignificant. You know, you got a good idea from these five.
Yeah, there's a couple other roads that, you know, in town here that are really almost driveways anymore. You know, private lanes and stuff like that that are all private roads that are all
not worth doing a study or anything or putting a limit on is what you're getting at.
Correct.
But if we had a township speed limit, it would have to cover those roads. That's my question.
Or just establishing speed limits on those few roads.
That's my question. Can we establish just a speed limit on those?
That was
five roads
instead of imposing a, you know, I don't know, again, cost effective. Is it cheaper to do an ordinance? Every road that's not posted 35 miles an hour in the township.
Right.
That, I don't know. That would be my thought, as opposed to, you know, Rocky Run's this, you know, Mount Grove is this, Mount Airy is this, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I leave that to you.
Well, then, I guess the next step would also then be looking at this, reaching out to Steve to find out what the value is on, you know, he must have some kind of ballpark. It's X, you know, 1,000 to 3,000 or, you know, something per road to do this kind of study or who knows. I you know, and reach out to him and find out what it is that, because no matter what, we still have to do the study on those five that were, it was four that were the high-end roads or five that, I'm sorry.
The four. I did the main road, Rocky Run Road.
Right.
We get to the Mount Grove, Mount Airy, and what was the other one?
McKenzie. So there was, to do the study, the engineering study on those essentially four roads and then come back so that, to know, you know, that we could do a 35 mile an hour speed limit on those four. If that's it, you know, instead of having them do it on the other.
Or if you want to consider imposing a speed limit on those specific roads, it wouldn't have to be a 35, because the 35 is considered that suburban residential, you know, like that unwritten kind of speed limit. But to put the signs in place and back it with the legislature, with the DOT and stuff, then it becomes enforceable.
Right.
So if you just wanted to do speed limits on these specific roads here, then again, the engineer would have to also do his study on it. This is volume and speed.
You could
set them at anything you want.
Well, I know we could buy signs and have Warren put them on all the roads, but then
we've done that.
There
are roads like that.
But to be able for you guys to enforce it and have teeth to it, it needs to follow that path.
They have to be DOT approved.
So to get that DOT approval, they do it by the road, not for the town then. That's designated for that road.
It can be by the town, is what I'm saying. I don't know if the engineer, if it's going to be cost efficient for him to just go out and look at these four bigger roads, higher speed roads, and do that, or impose a whole township ordinance and then have to go into all of these.
Is Spiker Road posted? That 35? Sliker?
Yeah, Sliker's 35.
35, okay.
Yeah.
I think I would know that, but...
Yes. You're going so fast, you can't...
It's a blur.
Everybody's
signs been there so long, I don't notice them anymore. I'm looking for Alfred Deer.
That's right. Okay. Well, I guess the next step is then just finding a budget item from Steve of what this value is worth on this. You know, I got to believe he's probably done something of that nature for it to give us some kind of value that we can then make a determination on how we want to move forward with it in one fashion or another, if we just want to buy signs and
legit. If he has that information to where he can just pull it up or if he has to physically go out and tape measure and everything else. So I don't know.
Okay.
If we went the whole DOT route, would you see your officers patrolling or, you know, radar testing these roads? I mean, how often would you enforce these if we had the whole DOT?
Well, I have my guys do random radar throughout the whole town. Right now, my priority with the schools are in session. I got my guys in schools, and the guys been doing good. They've been in there a couple hours a day between all our schools. And then they have assigned radar posts that fluctuate every month. Go here, we're getting complaints here, I want you over here. Mm-hmm. After school, I want you in these areas over here. That would be also added on. Those roads would be added into those posts. Mm-hmm. We still have, and I have in the past, sat on these roads as a deterrent to slow traffic down, mm-hmm. too. Because especially this time of year, it could be bright, clear section of road. You come around a corner, oh crap, there's a big patch of ice that the sun didn't get to. So, you know, just by us getting there, just, you know, slow it down. Mm-hmm. There's no speed limit, but first thing you do when you see a cop is you slow down, yeah. whether you're doing a speed limit or not. Yeah. So my job's done, yeah. you know.
That's, I'm just wondering what the benefit of the full DOT approval to enforce summons on those roads would be.
Maybe right. make people a little more aware. You know?
But they wouldn't know. If there's a sign up,
yeah.
they don't know if it's a DOT enforceable right. sign or not. They,
right. True.
It's a deterrent, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, just the sign is a deterrent.
Yeah, yep.
The sign
yep.
is absolutely a deterrent.
And we could do that without any engineering study if we wanted to. I mean, I agree we should find out the
value.
Cost, but...
But, yeah, I mean, it's just buying
the
sign and telling,
Christian, what do you think
and telling
to
Warren where to put it.
Talk to Rich about the legal
posting
aspect.
Posting the sign there but not having it.
If something
not having it legal?
Yeah.
It's not enforceable.
I understand.
Let me
is,
put
it
that.
Is it illegal for us to put the sign there?
No, it's advisory at that point. Yeah. But the bottom line is, as a practical matter, and the chief will probably, I assume, kind of agree with what I'm saying, they issue the tickets. You know, they don't know if the sign is legal or not, right? Sign's up there.
Most often they don't.
Right. So you issue the ticket, and as a practical matter, what happens? People go to court, and they pay the fines.
Gotcha.
So, you know, if somebody challenges it.
If somebody's concerned, it's okay.
The other thing is an officer can always, if he looks at the sign, and he can always offer two summonses, one for careless driving and one for speeding, so that, mm-hmm. you know, you could double dip there, and the idea is you go to court, you cut a deal,
plea bargain,
which everybody does, and that's what it's anticipated. So, I mean, there's ways to work around a thing like this.
Just but as a committee, we're covered. We're not.
No.
There's no something out there that, you know, we put that sign up and.
Brian, I'm pretty sure I can keep you out of the death penalty as a result of this.
Right.
Maybe,
okay.
maybe 3 to 5 years, maybe, but, you know.
And I can answer, like Dick's saying. Very seldom have people requested discover for a motor vehicle summons. Now, if it was something worse, DUI or something like that, then they're requesting more discovery. The DOT approval on the traffic light, the speed. You know, the attorneys, a good attorney is going to request, I want everything, because the more I get, the more holes I can find. I write you a ticket, very, you know, it's very unlikely that you're going to request discovery on DOT approval on the speed limits and, you know, and everything else on the road.
Right.
So, it says, if they do, I lose it in court. Whatever.
Right.
You know?
What streets are DOT approved now?
Well...
Because Red Mill Road just was done a few years back. Now, I don't think that was done through DOT, was it?
Yeah. Red Mill is, I think, the extension on Muskanek on River Road, where Warren put up the signs for us years ago. That wasn't. It was in the works to be. I have yet to see anything that said it was DOT approved, but it did its job. It slowed people
right.
down. And we have written tickets on it. You know, and nobody, you know, say, ah, it's not DOT. Whatever. My job is make safe place safe around here.
Right.
And if I put up signs as 35 where you get a ticket and they're doing 35, you know, I'm good with that.
Okay.
Well, like I said, I'll talk to Steve and find out, and then we can make a decision if we just buy them and put them up.
If it's a lot of money, then we'll just
buy the signs. And
at least that's a start.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Tell you how many to put out. Because
yeah.
they're, you know, to make it kind of look like it's the other
right.
food, there's space.
Spacing.
There are any intersections, you know, anytime mm-hmm. there's an egress coming on or an exit, you got to put these signs in specific spots. So,
But I think those four roads justify it with what, you know, some of the, you know, the issues and the speeds that are there. And I mean, driving on them, they really should be 35.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know, the road department did a great job on Mount Grove. It's like, you know, yeah, like a roller coaster. It's fun. You know, yeah. That's what this kid was thinking, evidently.
Yeah.
Or kid. It could have been a guy, could have been a gal. I don't know.
Sometimes they actually say it was fun. I've heard that somebody responded that way one time.
Oh, yeah?
To an officer. Oh, I did it. It was fun. There's that little hill there. And you go,
you know, when I was little, we used to have to go to ShopRite in Washington, and we'd go to Back Way, and there was this one little road. My mother would always hit that bump for fun with the kids there.
And your stomach goes up and down.
Hit the thank you, ma'am.
That does happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jack. I appreciate your time and your officer's time involved in getting that. Then we have the surplus sale that Warren had with the equipment. He has here in front of us the seven items that he had for sale and who he recommends releasing them to. It turns out to be somewhere around $11,900 in equipment. I have no issues. If anybody else has any issues with who he recommends as purchasers.
Yep, sealed bids. Everything came in the way it should.
Yep.
So.
So basically a motion to approve him, I guess, selling it and releasing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 The next item is this tax assessor position. On that sheet, this is basically copied off of the League of Municipalities to try to just get an idea of how many people are out there. And we knew about this for a little while. Reddington was one of the other places that our assessor worked, but they are looking at a bigger, from what I understand, more hours now, so it doesn't really fit to be a shared service. So before this gets too far away from us, just to get an idea, what I should have done here is X'd out the hours and stuff like that. Realistically, I think from what Mike and I talked, it's somewhere going to be a 12 to 16 on the high end hour position. The one thing that we feel is in talking, we should look at probably having evening hours for this person, at least one night a week of a few hours, for people that can't make it to the municipal building. So looking at putting this advertising out in the League Municipality, this is one of the areas that we can do that to see what kind of response we get. So where it says hours and such, I would like to probably change that to being 12 to 16 part-time hours with required evening, an evening hour, an evening night for availability to public also.
I'm sorry, is that in addition to?
No, including.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't word that very well.
No, due to it being a union position, it wouldn't be a part-time, it would be an hourly, right?
Does hourly,
it matter
yes.
For this purpose of...
It'd be hourly. I think it would just say hourly. Okay. Yeah, I think for the
union. How do you pay the tax assessor now? Is she paid hourly or...
Salary.
Salary.
But she's under the 20 hours a week in our contract, which states that that's an hourly position under 20.
Right. I guess that you would then have to follow the contract.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah, the point is here. We also want to make sure we follow the contract more than what has been done in the past.
Do we want to be that specific on the hours? Because in my conversations with Mary, I think if we found the right person who only had 8 hours and we provided them clerical support, that might be a solution. And given it sounds like we're going to have a hard time finding the right, you know, certified person and the like.
Right.
If they didn't have clerical support, Mary thinks, you know, 16 hours is because she does a lot of the frontline assessment preparation and other things herself. So I just don't know if we want to
Well, I mean, I
be
don't
that
know
specific at this point.
Or do we want to just say part-time, hourly part-time?
Mary also said that the 3,000 line, by specifying that, somebody with experience is going to know what that takes to do.
Mm. Okay. So just saying part-time hourly with
why don't you leave part-time and...
Or hourly.
You have to put an hourly there?
I mean, or hourly.
The contract.
Well,
hourly.
Can I just look through the contract, too? Just, I don't mean right now, but, you know, just to make sure that we can't... I assume normally tax assessors are paid on a salary basis because the idea is they get a salary and it's their responsibility to fulfill the job within their salary time. So if they can do it a little more efficiently, they get the same salary. But if for some reason there's a bump in the amount of effort that's required at a particular point in time, you don't pay more. So let me just see if I can maybe look through the contract and see if there's some way we could come up with a way. Well, I mean, it's your choice. You want to pay her hourly. It's up to you. I don't mean to tell you what to do, but it just seems to me that traditionally they're paid on a salary basis. And that gives you a certain measure of knowledge as to exactly what it's going to cost you to provide that service.
Yeah. Cool. And the salary ordinance we just did, she was in that position in that ordinance as a high-end, low-end for the salary. So... is there a better way to just put it out there more generically, just to start? I mean, I just like to see if we can get applications in and see what kind of response we get. What is a simple way we can?
In other words, you have to put the word hourly in there,
or just took that word out.
You'd be fine, right?
Well, or what do we have to put in there to try to put this out there, just to start seeing who responds?
3,000. What the line
is? Can we leave out that all and, you know, and just is the 3,000 enough? And leave out all the other specifics just to start getting applications back. And because if this person does know just 3,000 lines, say, okay, this is a small place. You know what I mean? And leave out the whole hourly, leave out the quantities, and just say,
by our definition, part-time is an individual who regularly works 20 hours or more per week, but less than 40. And so we'll definitely be not part-time by the contract definition.
On average for the year, she would work, even when she has assessments and so forth, and, you know, to go out in the field and et cetera.
Mary currently works 2 days a week, and that's the maximum that we would need.
Right, but she works in the office 2 days a week, or she works 2 days a week?
She's in the office.
Yep.
She's not very. She's very rarely in the field.
Right. Oh, okay.
Right. Okay. I think her activity has her very rarely at the appeals office and things.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking at the same definitions, but let me just read through the contract to see if there's, because it just seems like an odd way to do it, especially since tradition has been on a salary basis,
right? Mm-hmm. Problem is, it just the whole union contract, the salary,
well,
you know.
You want to table it to the next meeting?
Does it state anything about certified employees?
It said there's a category for professional employees.
But they're excluded, though.
No, right? Some of ours
are. Well, that's true, yeah. Oh, you're right.
But that wouldn't give the impression of 8 to 16 hours a week.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that could be full-time, if you just say professional.
Right, exactly. You know, and I do want to make clear that it's a, you know, and a big part of this, the problem here that has arisen with this is because Christy changed the way pensions work in the state. So seeing what kind of interest we get back from people, because they don't want to do sometimes these part-time jobs because it doesn't accrue towards their pension anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's more, a lot of times they'll work at one place and try to get a shared service out of there, so it boosts their hours at the other community, and then we would pay them. So that may be an avenue we have to go if we don't get an interest from people that are, we feel, qualified. So this was really trying to just get an idea of, is there an interest or should we go another direction, is really what I'm really trying to do here. So however simplified we can make this, just to see what we get back as a response, and that hopefully in a week or two would tell us if we got to start knocking on other communities' doors and finding out if there's time available.
What if we said something generic like hours to be determined to address 3,000 lines?
That's well done. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not, and it's hours is it's not. Right, but it says hours, so it's understood as it's hours. You know,
yeah,
not,
if somebody comes and says, you know, okay, I'm happy to do that for 40 hours a week, we say next.
Right, yeah, exactly. That's not a bad idea. That's probably not a bad wording for it. With, you know, I think we just want to specify also, like, you know, like an evening, with one, you know, one evening. Availability a week.
Well, even I think when we get down to that level of detail,
that's true.
My understanding is that there's the appeal season, there's a farmland assessment season. So, you know, whether we say evening hours during certain periods, or, you know,
right,
by appointment
determined.
Available, or so I think your idea of doing it on a night when the committee is here, so that would be, you know, first and third Wednesday, mm-hmm. hour evening mm-hmm. hours available, something.
So what was that wording then that you just said? There's a
whatever. That's something like hours. I'm certain there's something like hours to be determined to address 3,000 line municipality.
3,000 lines of property lines, right?
Yeah. And just for everybody, the 3,000 lines is just roughly 2,500 houses that we have in our, like, individual residents in our town, and then the rest are businesses and other things that need to be assessed.
Okay. Okay.
You know, the problem is I'm looking at the definitions. Professionals are excluded except for the subcode official, which is brought in there, which is bizarre. The trouble is the definitions don't match up with the statutory employees. Mm-hmm. They don't work necessarily. So we may have to be stuck with that. Mm-hmm. The thing is, you want to end up, though, so you don't have that, you know what it's going to be at the end of the year, what the salary is going to be, because otherwise, well, I got to go out in the field for 10 hours today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so you got to get some control over that.
Okay. Is this something we want to look at again, or do if we change that, basically taking out the hours where it says hours down to public and basically inserting, you know, hours to be determined to address the 3,000 property lines along that line. I mean, and then we can at least look at getting it posted and see what responses we get. And as I understand it from what Mike has said too, is like if, you know, we don't have somebody in this position on May, the county does take on some of the roles. I know Karen said she had done some of the responsibilities last year that the county doesn't do. And as long as we kind of are showing that we're trying to get somebody in that position, they will do some assistance on this. Thoughts? Do we want to wait another meeting to come up with this, or do we want to, is that, are we in a position to do it or not?
I'm just wondering, what did you make a determination what you thought, Dick? Or?
I think the way it's worded keeps it open, but the answer is that the contract definitions are kind of a straitjacket in terms of, you know, because I'm thinking, okay, if you used the idea of a part-time employee, you don't want to say that she's going to work more than 20 hours because it's inconsistent with what you're trying to accomplish. And a couple of years down the road, if there's a dispute over salary, you know, she's going to the person could open up some questions down the road. So I guess it just seems crazy to pay the assessor on an hourly basis.
Keep in mind that contract is currently in the renegotiation phase.
Right.
So it highlights
right what needs to be done.
Priorities.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the answer is, why don't you get the employee in, kind of find out who you want, have some discussions with her, and then we'll kind of figure out at that time whether there's anything we could do in terms of maybe the union would, I don't know.
Well, we're just looking to try to get applications right
now. Well, I
get
the application. You can get it in just the way you phrased it, but.
Okay. And then if we find an interest in anybody that is interest, you know, that. that seems to fit the bill, then we can have more detailed discussion.
Kind of finesse that issue if we can in any way.
Okay. So are we fine with then just adding the line that says hours to be determined to address the 3,000 property line?
Line items, yep.
Line.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, and take out all that other. That makes sense, Karen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do we need a motion for that? Or no?
Yes, please. A motion to post.
Post with the hourly and consistent with the nearly 3,000 line items.
I'll second that.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Thank you.
You're welcome.
Then we have a request for DPW manager to go out to bid for blacktop for the year 2017.
I discussed this with him as well. It's this is a local facility in Stewartsville, I believe it is, where sometimes they have, in the past years, they've had lower prices than the state contract and better, fresher material. And so this doesn't cost anything. He thinks he can just send it out to bid, and that way, if he needs more than $17,500 of blacktop.
Is that Warren?
It's flexible. This is Warren.
Warren, yeah.
So basically, if we can get a motion to approve him going out to bid, requesting bids.
I'll make a motion for Warren to go out and request bids for the purchase of blacktop.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 I have to seriously apologize and go use the bathroom real quick.
Motion of privilege. Me too.
Sorry.
That's what you do.
Motion second. Roll call.
I'm learning my Robert's rules.
Usually it's me.
Long night.
Yeah.
We're getting there. We're making progress. Do we have stuff for executive? Anybody know?
I thought he did.
Did he?
Nothing. Nothing contentious.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
We'll see. I'm gonna stand up at least.
Wow.
Where's all the public?
Snowed in.
Like
not exactly the kind of night you want to run out for entertainment.
Put some country music on or something, right? Something a little upbeat. Do it.
Dick, did you want to give an update on COA in executive? Or? No.
Not really, unless you want one.
Not really.
Yeah.
New draft was attached.
Yeah. People are looking at it, I assume, right? Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah. And Tara said no rush, so you could do it at the next meeting since it didn't exactly get here real early. So.
These are already done for you.
Thank you.
We'll wait for Bevan, but it was just a question whether we're going into executive tonight.
The only thing would be COA if we need anything for that, but if otherwise, no. Okay.
Tara will be at the next meeting, so she can go over any issues that exist with respect to that. So.
Next item is police chief request for purchasing bulletproof vests.
Obviously, we need. We talked about this, I think, at the budget meeting that
yes.
vests are getting old.
The question came up. Yes.
Well, we're gonna need a larger thing.
Some of us do.
Get one with rabies.
So, can we get a motion to approve the purchase request?
I'd certainly make that motion to approve the expenditure of a voucher of $8,558.90 for the purchase of bulletproof vests.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Junior Police Academy?
Yes. We years ago had ran a Junior Police Academy, Police Youth Week. I wanted to get it going again. It was a great idea. Keep it back to the grassroots that it started from. I had talked with Jason Cornegie. Found out when eighth grade graduation is supposed to be the 13th, probably now the 15th with the snow days. But I'm looking at the target week of the 19th and 23rd, a Monday through Friday. I talked with Jim about using the facility next door for having classroom environment. I'm hoping around 20-plus kids. I'm going to go, again, committee's blessing and approval, I want to do this. I want to go talk to an assembly, 8th grade assembly, kind of make the pitch, what we're going to do, close order drill, some marching, PT, short runs, push-ups, sit-ups. We'll do the marching. I don't know if anybody remembers the years ago when I would march the kids around in formation, get out front of the building, salute the building, pledge of allegiance, and kind of carry on like that. It built a lot, put a lot of discipline into kids. The kids really learned a lot of self-discipline, a lot of respect, just a great way to foster our relationship with the youth. And got talked with Sharon Burham. She's a coordinator for the county CPR program. She could come in, she would do a three-hour, she said, I could do it for familiarization, first aid, CPR, or I could do a three-hour block of instruction on CPR, and the kids could be certified in CPR. Talk with Jimmy about his guys showing the proper use of fire extinguisher and stuff, not to make them all firemen, but at least they know how to react. And we're talking 8th graders, 13, 15-year-old kids. So if something were to happen, they could know enough to call that 911, hit it with a fire extinguisher, get out of the house or something to that regard. Get a canine demonstration. Just kind of give an overview on police work, and maybe it might drum up some recruits in the future, some junior cadets for the fire department or rescue squad. Try to encompass all of the emergency services, police, fire, rescue, and usually it's been a pretty good week. Every time we do that, they have a good time.
May even spark some interest into joining volunteering in the military.
Yeah. Yeah, a few of the kids over the years have gone into the military. But I really like doing it. When I think 97 was the first year we did it, and I ran it for several years, myself and Patrolman Smith. And it was probably one of the best weeks of the whole year for me because, again, work with the kids and seeing how they kind of, like, took to it all. And it was a good time. So I have younger guys now that I said, start thinking about it. This is what I want to do. Put it in your mind that this week you guys will be working with kids, get programs, you know, put lesson plan together on what you want to do, like action reconstruction, radar, how the science and radar works like that, how we document action reports, and, you know, stuff that's going to be of interest to the kids. So. That's why I had on my budget had put in an increase of like another $1,000 for community policing, going towards the cost of that T-shirt and a hat for the kids. And talking with Sharon, she had said for the CPR, for a kid to be Red Cross certified in CPR, it's a $10 certification because the Red Cross charges for the cards. I could put that as a registration fee, $10 registration fee. For the kids. Pam Chief Shell in the past did, when she was doing the program, I forget, it started off like $15-$20 and then I think it got to be, I was not actively involved in the academy towards the end of it, but it was like upwards to like $100. that she was charging. They were doing big field trips, and we used to go marching all over the place, and the kids had better uniforms than we're wearing now. I don't want to go there. Like I said, my intent was grassroots. Get the kids here, keep them in the yard, pick ball, learn this, learn that. We know you, you know me, and we go from there. T-shirt and a hat, and, you know, bring your lunch every day. Friday we'll buy some pizzas and some soda, and we'll hang out at the park or something like that. That's about it. So, thoughts, feedback?
Your enthusiasm is contagious.
I'll make a motion to let our police chief restart our junior police academy.
I'll second that motion.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Thank you.
My only question is there anything we just have to talk to, you know, the insurance company to make sure it cover is covered?
That's what I was going to suggest also.
We have that under control.
That volunteer thing with that.
At Karen's advice, we had already undertaken that step.
Okay, good. That's all. Just to make sure we're covered.
It's so funny, you know, when you talk about this, and then Pam talked about this one time, you both have that same glow. I know there's something to it when I see that.
It's for the kids, and knowing what the kids got out of it and what I got out of it, it's very rewarding.
Yep. Good.
I like the phrase a win-win.
Yeah.
In this case, it's also a three-win. And I would like to also pose that part of that community policing and everything is the political involvement. So if any of you would like to talk about the politics, how you got involved, something like that, you know, I got to have a week to fill up. And once we start writing things down, that week's going to fill up real quick. So I'd like to offer that to any or all of you. I know it'd be hard to do. It's Monday through Friday. I'm looking at like an 8:30 to 4:30 kind of days. But I think it'd be, you know, it'd be nice to have also your support as committee persons behind, you know, behind the program, and, you know, the kids, future mayors, councilmen, and councilwomen.
Yeah, when the week is, when you determine, let me know. I'll make time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. I can go with you too, because I'm around.
Yeah, you're retired now.
That's right.
Was there any old business before? I know we went into new business. Was there any old business anybody wanted to bring up?
No, ma'am.
Then we have presentation of vouchers.
I have none that qualify.
I have none that qualify, but I have one, and it's a nit thing, and I just wanted to get your opinion on this one, Mark. I was looking at the backup to this. It's, you know, Aqua for the library, 1723. But when I look at, there looks like there was a past due balance, and the amount is 3388. So I was talking to Karen, and we're not sure if we just approved the 3388, and if that is a mistake.
Oh, that you didn't include the.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why it would be 1723, but I don't. You know, I'm seeing amount owed from last bill.
I'm kind of thinking that it probably is paid, and that's why it crossed. And Joanne probably should have maybe crossed that out and just put, you know, that it was paid or whatever. But if you can just approve the bill list, and maybe once Bev has clarification,
right,
it can be paid either the $16 or the $33.
Yeah, God bless you. Because it sounds like the amount from the last bill is $32.72. Like, that might have been paid. But then, and last time, they only got a payment of $16.07. I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know, because I didn't see another bill come through, and I would have had to sign it, right? So.
I'm going to excuse myself.
Well, thank you,
Jack. Hey, Jack. See ya. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can just approve that with
Bev's clarification on it.
Bev's clarification.
Yeah. Okay.
So is there any that you had that?
No.
Okay.
No.
I have two. One is for a washer generator. It's the final payment for the generator installation. This is for basically the coverage of the 1 year of monitoring and the 5 year extended warranty for it, which is a total of $5,450. And then I have the committee pictures, frames for myself, Mike, Bev, and the reframing of the Ron and Bernie, which is $2,423. That's it.
How much?
$4,000. No,
$2,000.
Yeah, if it was that much, I'd be upset.
So I've got New Jersey Health Benefit Plan.
for the month of March for active benefits, $38,846.56, and for retired benefits for the month, $2,659.78. SDG Alarmtronics, annual monitoring for the police and municipal building and the annual inspection, $2,107. Cooperative Communications, $1,029.08. CoreLogic, which is the refund department, the tax payment that we agreed to earlier, $2,651.06. And Finch Fuel Oil Company, $1,447.23. And one more, sorry. The shared court services for the first quarter, $9,471.25.
Do you have any, Tom? Okay, can I get a motion to approve the vouchers along with the issue with Bev getting clarification on the aqua bill?
I'll approve the motion to approve, or I'll make the motion to approve the vouchers with Bev getting clarification on the aqua bill.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Abstain.
Yes.
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 Okay, thank you. Correspondence, we have correspondence from the tax collector, tax year 2017, $3,712,465. Taxes the year 2016, $48,160.78. Interest, $4,437.98. Return check fee, $20. For total receipts of $3,765,083.76. And we have correspondence from the Hunter County Engineers. I guess there is, they are going to look, I have a public hearing on the replacement of the bridge going over the Muspinicon River Road up there by Point Mountain is what the one I believe this bridge is, this L25W. That is going to be on April, the public hearing is on April 19th from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Mansfield Township Municipal Building located at 100 Port Murray Road in Port Murray, New Jersey.
It's the night of our meeting,
yeah.
So I crossed it off.
We have also correspondence from the REC as far as their discussions of what they're going to look at doing this year. And that's it. So can I get a motion to open the public comment?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Can I get a motion to close, seeing no public?
I'll make a motion to close.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. We have nothing for executive session. So can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 You.
Ah.